following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in progress.
What are we talking about here? Orgy? Is it a human sacrifice of some kind?
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
I've studied the human mind. I've learned how to read it and ultimately control it.
Fascinating. I can't wait to read it.
It's $14.99 on my website.
Okay.
Plus shipping and handling.
Even if I buy it here?
It ships from somewhere else, didn't it? And I've been handling it.
Paul Perillo.
Very attractive man. Can fit a whole octopus in his mouth. Sort of an animal magnetism about him.
And Andy. And Andy?
Do you have any idea what it's like, Tim, to be up to your elbow in a zebra's vagina?
Andy Hart.
What does it make you think of?
I guess it kind of makes me, think of your penis.
Then you get it.
Eric Scalavino.
You know, that is so like you. You call a guy a douche and you get your first museum show out of it.
For now, anyway.
It smells like cabbage on this floor.
That's the smell of dead dreams.
I go to the clubs at night and people are like, hey, who's wearing the coleslaw? You know how hard it is to get laid when you smell like coleslaw?
PFW in progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Oh man, they are planning one hell of a party.
All right, welcome to PFW in progress. Gang's here, Andy's here, Paul's here, Kevin's in the booth, I'm here, Eric will be by later, and...
No, he won't, actually.
You know, I tell you, if it wasn't for the fact that we released the new Patriots iPad app, I'd have nothing good to say today. But we have a lot to talk about. We got to figure this out, folks, right?
The app or the team?
The team. Are we gonna help the Patriots figure this out? On the show?
I don't think they need any of our help, Freddie.
Well, they need something.
I don't think they're going to be throwing four interceptions most weeks.
No,
myself.
I don't. But
I bet they're giving up 30 most weeks.
But
I didn't say anything about that.
But
I said I don't think they're going to be throwing four interceptions
most
weeks.
But Andy has a statement to make about the defense.
Everyone who listens to this knows I'm prone to be reactionary a little bit.
Hyperbolic.
Especially
maybe.
With the team. Generally, I give players long periods, but team general thoughts, I bounce to reactions. I think this is the worst defense of the Belichick era.
Wow.
I do.
That's a big statement.
I don't remember feeling this bad about the 05 or the 02 or some of those other bad defenses. Or even last year. This defense is terrible.
All right. Well, we're going to talk
about that.
Literally,
I thought every play could go for a touchdown the other day. It felt like every play was like a fingertip away from being a touchdown. They can't stop the run. Fred Jackson was running. They can't stop the pass, obviously. I think they're terrible.
Well, we're going to talk about that, whether or not you agree. You'll have a chance to chime in. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline down here at the Subway Fresh broadcast studios.
So
well
was,
done.
Was the nod wrong the other day? Did he give the nod?
Oh, yeah, he gave nothing? The nod big time.
The nod has been wrong in all three games this season.
There's no more nods.
I'm 0 for 3 this
proving
season.
Proving its irrelevance.
Yeah, we are not doing any
I know
more
that Fred
nods.
Fred thinks that as long as you win the game, the nod is correct. That's incorrect. The games should no longer be in doubt when the nod is given. I'm 0 for 3 this year.
Yeah, Paul's giving nods based on the fact that you can play defense.
That is correct. That's my fatal flaw.
Right.
I assume that you can actually force a punt.
Right.
I was wrong.
So I'm.
Oh, they forced a couple.
We're gonna ban nods. We're gonna ban nods for the rest of the season.
First of all, are you prohibiting me from giving a nod?
Yes.
Because I think that the fans are gonna be very upset at you.
No, because
very, very upset.
They're more upset when you give the nod.
They were all looking for it. They were all looking for it on Sunday.
Of course they were.
After I had already given it, and Warren Ladd was there to tell everybody 10 minutes ago, 25 minutes ago, last hour. I mean, he was telling everybody, you guys are missing it.
Yeah, I know.
They're going to be upset.
But now they don't want it anymore. They made it perfectly clear.
You don't want it anymore.
No, people on
don't
the
speak
blog,
for the fans.
People on the blog made it perfectly clear, tell Paul no more nods. So,
how are you feeling?
A
little better than when I eavesdropped over your conversation in your office post game and I heard some ridiculousness spew from your mouth.
I was really, really, really upset.
I could tell the ridiculous things you were saying.
I was more upset. You know, just angry after this loss than I was against the Jets loss last year in the playoffs.
Really?
Because there was no need for this loss. The Jets loss, we got beat. We got beat.
Needless is a great word for this loss.
There was no need for this loss, and I was just... And then the press box erupting and the celebration just made it even... You know how I get.
It was a college atmosphere. Yeah. They had to take the goalpost down.
I was ready to fight.
I do know how you get, but I don't blame you on this one. That would have really, really...
Oh, it
that
really,
I would have been seething.
It irritated me.
I don't like that nonsense, that unprofessional nonsense.
Oh, you would have chest bumped the guy.
No, it really, really bothers
me.
I'm dead serious.
The only
Sandy.
Thing that stopped me from throwing myself in front of Bus 4 was an email from John in L.A. who quoted Eric's blog, which the quote was, "My roommate, who has come twice, says the earlier the better."
So, I actually told him about that, and he gets so ridiculously defensive. That's okay. I don't write for them. I write for me. Really? Isn't that what a diary is for? There's where you write for you. But when you're a professional writer, aren't you writing for your audience?
That's true.
Isn't he paid to write so that people like it and read it?
I mean, sometimes in a novel, you can say, oh, the author writes for himself or whatever. But he's not writing novels. This is a blog that...
Therein lies the problem.
You want people to read it. And he says, no, I'm writing for myself. Then write in a journal. That's where you write for yourself, where only you read it.
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
Anyway, so that kind of took the edge off, but I was really, really angry after the game.
And you've come to the point now that...
It's week three. And, you know, let's relax. There's a lot of teams out there that are dealing with things that are going wrong.
Sure.
That, it, you know, they'll be 180 degrees different by the time we get to week 16 for some of those teams and hopefully for the Patriots. You know, every team's dealing with injuries, but that was a factor. You had, you know, the oldest guy out there in this as safety was what, Josh Barrett, with that type of experience. You know, so I just think it's still, we've been talking about it, and it's going to sound like, you know, stupid if we keep having to say it, but it is a work in progress when it comes to this defense. We can be happy that the offense is leading the league in just about every category, and we know that Brady's not going to do what he did again.
Right. Hadn't done it since 2006.
And probably won't do it again for another 4 years. You know?
Maybe.
So,
unless you believe the theory that Paul espouses, is that how you say that word, espouses?
Yeah, but what...
That pressure, that the pressure of having to feel like everything rides on you changes things, and that makes you more prone
but
to the
But he's been under
days.
That pressure for three or 4 years now.
I'm not sure. I literally think this is the worst defense they've ever had.
Yeah,
ever.
I understand.
Last year against the Ravens, you got some play. I don't think this defense right now, is capable of doing anything against anyone.
Well, I also don't think there was much of a difference from the performance Sunday to the performance in the first 2 weeks.
No, I
don't either.
I think the difference was the four turnovers that you
That's
had
why I don't
that
buy
put
into
your defense
the
in tougher
progress,
spots.
Saying that, you know, this is a work in progress.
27 points, 24
progress.
Points, and 21
zero
points.
Zero progress.
Right.
And part of it is McCourty, because you've had no progress there, and I agree with what you said. That would change a lot of things if he could be competitive, and he's not competitive
right now.
We
talked about this morning, you know, we always have our morning chat at the cubicles, and
that's why I'm surprised that you rounded back into shape so quickly, Freddie. Because based on that chat, I thought we would be until tomorrow before we got the our old Fred.
One of
back.
The things I said when it comes to the defense going into the season, you knew you had Wilfork, you knew you had Mayo, and you knew you had McCourty.
Right.
Now you don't know you have McCourty, and in fact, you really don't have him. He's one of those things, and you know, that's a big, big loss, because that was a thing that you, a cornerstone. That was something that you were going to lean on this year, and you can't, at least right now. So that's a big problem. That has me worried, because after that, it's Lee Bodden who hasn't really shown much.
He's really looked bad. He's looked rusty.
He's benefited from how bad McCourty has looked, because otherwise he'd be the one.
And but he's really looked rusty, doesn't he? Like, he's getting beat off double moves. He's getting beat off the line a lot. He's had a lot of penalties. He just doesn't look good at all.
I don't understand this. I asked for a burger with blue cheese, you know, and they gave me the blue cheese, but they put cheese on it too. So, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
The more cheese, the better in my world.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
He gets so mad. He's just going to close it and throw it away. So, it's ruined it for him.
No, I'll eat it. So that's kind of where we're going at. So you add McCourty into the fact that, you know, they're just not getting a pass rush. I mean, Belichick said on Monday, you know, he felt that, you know, there was, or he might have been on EEI, that he felt that the pressure was there at times. And maybe it was, but, and I know sacks aren't the end-all, be-all stat, but shouldn't you have one against a guy who threw for over 400 yards?
40 attempts, 2 hits, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, okay, he gets
Did they ever make him throw the ball before he wanted to?
He did. That one, the on the Kyle Love one, it fluttered incomplete.
No, I didn't say that. I said, did he ever throw the ball before he wanted to?
That was the one.
See, I don't think he did. I think maybe the pressure affected the throw. You could make that argument. But I don't think he ever threw the ball before he wanted to all day.
I thought he just threw it to open space on that one because he had, you know.
No, maybe you're right.
He was in the end zone and he was about to get creamed.
I mean, even the pass interference in the end zone that he rolled out, he was looking, and then decided, oh, I don't have anything here. I'm going to roll out. It wasn't because, you know, it was a jailbreak, you know, pass rush that forced him out of the pocket. He was looking downfield, didn't see anything he liked, and then he ended up, finally, some pressure got to him. I know that Bill is, listen, Bill's protecting his players. Bill's not going to say, yeah, you know, we're not getting any pressure on the passer. That's got to improve. He's not going to say that to us. He'll say it to them. But there's no way he felt like there was anything near adequate pressure on Sunday.
I can't imagine.
No way.
I mean, Haynesworth wasn't in there, all right? And maybe Wilfork was being double-teamed up the middle. Where's Ellison Carter?
Carter is the disappointment of the year.
These are the guys that are supposed to be doing it from the edge.
One of them.
You know, where are they? I want to see this guy get knocked down. I want to see him get dirty, Fitzpatrick.
You know what was
and
even
it just
worse
wasn't happening.
Than them not getting pressure is the Bills knowing beforehand they weren't going to get any pressure and the comments they made post-game about we knew we weren't going to be pressured so we could find opening. I mean, that's what people understand now. You can just sit back there and throw.
Maybe we're being stupid, and if we knew what was going on and we looked at the tape more thoroughly, we would realize, well, the Patriots were just rushing three most of the day, and they were dropping back, and that's what they were doing. They were flooding zones, and that's what they do. That was the game plan against Fitzpatrick to force him into mistakes. And you can't say that he didn't make mistakes. He did, early. He made a lot of mistakes, and by all intents and purposes, it should have been a blowout of those mistakes.
I disagree with you, to be honest with you. The first interception hit his receiver in the hands and bounced in the air for a pick. Not a mistake by Fitzpatrick. The second interception was a 4th and 15 that he just threw up for grabs. I mean, there was nothing else he could do about it. They were in between punting and field goal range. I don't think they forced a lot. The one mistake he made all day, to me, was the one that we bailed him out on with the Sergio Brown interference in the end zone. That was a terrible decision by Fitzpatrick that he was very, very lucky to have a second chance, because if they don't call pass interference, if Sergio Brown wasn't so unbelievably egregious just grabbing the guy, they probably let that go, and then that's a game-losing mistake by Fitzpatrick. Other than that, even the two picks I don't really think were mistakes by Fitzpatrick. I just think there were plays that happened in the course of the game. One of them was a tip, much like Brady's tip off of Darius. Well, and the ball goes in the air. Sometimes the other team's going to catch it. That ball hit his receiver in the hands.
Just so I know this might cause an argument, but Sergio Brown, he didn't grab him. He just stood there. He wasn't looking at the ball, and the guy ran into him.
He hugged him.
He blocked his way. He had his arms outstretched.
Exactly. Exactly.
But he didn't hug him.
Yeah. No, he had his arms outstretched. He wouldn't let the guy by. That's pass interference.
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't pass interference, but he didn't hug
him. If he wasn't so egregious with it, he probably gets away with it. I think he was so over the top by showing everybody, I'm not letting this guy by. The referee had no alternative to call it there.
Yeah.
The call that I go back to is the Kyle Love one that you mentioned earlier about the fluttering pass. That one to me, and I still haven't seen a real good look at it. If he touched his face, I thought that they said during the summer that if the blow to the head wasn't a, quote, forcible blow, they were going to have a little bit more discretion on those. That to me seemed like a bad call. That to me didn't look like it was a forcible blow to the head that they had to call roughing the passer. And that was a big penalty. Instead of 2nd and 10, you know, it's 1st and 10 from 15 yards downfield. That's a big difference, and that was a big call in the game. The pass interference, I don't have any problem with at all.
Yeah, I don't think either Paul or I, even with the Love thing, are saying that penalties is the reason the Patriots lost this game. But on that pass interference, I the ball was thrown, it was, you know, underthrown. I don't think that Nelson had a chance to make the catch. And I think that the discretion of the ref should have said, I got to let this one go.
I don't think it was as far from being a catchable ball as you think it is. Barrett caught it at like 2 yards, 3 yards deep in the end zone, and he was 2 to 3 yards from the back line. That means he's only 5, 6 yards from the ball. If you don't restrict him with a ball thrown that high, he's got a chance to catch it.
At the very least, he had a chance to break up the play.
The restriction came so late in the flight of the ball. The ball was almost in Barrett's hands when the restriction happened. I don't think there was any way he could have made up that ground.
It's a penalty.
It just looked bad.
Also because you had your two worst safeties back there.
Right.
I mean, that showed the depth issue you have at safety. A, the lack of awareness for Sergio Brown. I also thought it was questionable after Barrett picked it. He was dancing around the end zone, and I didn't really know what he was doing.
Well, he didn't know whether to run out with it or down it.
Well, make a decision.
And I was yelling in the press box, take a knee.
But either way, make a decision. Don't just stand there running in circles.
Right.
All of a sudden, you get popped or something, you fumble.
Right.
Something bad could happen there.
Right.
And I thought that whole play showed what they lack in experience, awareness, and talent in the secondary right now.
Well, you know, and then the game got crazy, as everyone knows. At the end of the game, McCourty makes the tackle on the half-yard line. And I'm thinking, let him score at that point. As soon as I saw him split the defenders and run free, I said, just let him go in.
Shows how much of a black season he's having right now. Everything's wrong. Even when he makes a great hustle play, everybody says, should let him score
there. And again, Paul's right. Belichick will never, ever throw his players, current players, under the bus. But, you know, he said, look, I can't blame McCourty on that. That's a football play.
You can't.
You know,
no defender is ever going to let a guy score unless he's coached right before the play to let him score.
Right. In that case, I don't think that Bill is protecting his player. I think that that's 100% accurate. There's no way you can sit there and realistically ask Devin McCourty not to tackle the guy who's running with the go-ahead touchdown into the end zone.
I don't think any player on earth would do that.
Now,
I really don't.
We have the benefit of sitting there watching, not reacting to the play. We're watching. Right. And I immediately said it to Andy. He's got to get, you know, getting in there is better. And Andy and I sort of went back and forth a little bit. Andy thought because it's Buffalo and the way they're prone to screw things up, you just want to take the points and take the lead.
I felt
the only way that the Patriots are going to, the only way that Buffalo loses the game, once he splits the defenders, as you said, Fred, the only way Buffalo could lose the game was in overtime. So the most time that goes off the clock at that point, the better. But I don't think you can ask Devin McCourty. Now, you could ask the players, if Buffalo was foolish enough to run a ball into the line at the end of the game, you can ask your players, just let them score. You know, when they're on the one-yard line, the ball gets respotted there, just let them score, and we need to get the ball back.
Right. But they weren't stupid. That's stupid. So the ball gets spotted at the half-yard line, and Belichick immediately runs down the sideline to talk to the refs. Now, this is where all the confusion came, because at the end of this big argument down there, he ends up calling a timeout. So everybody was questioning, why did he call a timeout? And I think that at that point, I think Belichick just felt that, you know, there's no way we're going to be – I need to, you know, settle the troops. The clock's going to start as soon as he spots the ball. You know, I need to get this timeout. But I also think he was forced to. This is where I think the pool reporter or the refs didn't tell the pool reporter or – Belichick saying, I think he might have been flagged if he hadn't called a timeout. Because the ref said in the pool report, I was wondering why he was down there. So at the end of the day, Belichick told the ref, I'm going to call a timeout. That's why I'm down here. And so he had to kind of go through with that. Otherwise, he might have been flagged for being down there, you know, for that long. So I think he had to go kind of through with what he said he was going to do.
That might be true. I mean, they were going to call him for a penalty or whatnot, but this was lost on Andy and I originally too while we were watching. He had to call timeout. He had no alternative, not because of any flag, but you said it. They go to review, they overturn the touchdown and say he's down by contact inside the 1 yard line. He didn't go out of bounds. The clock is not going to stop.
Right.
As soon as they put the ball ready for play, the whistle blows, that clock is going to run. That's 25 more seconds that go off the clock. Bill had to call timeout.
Yeah.
You can't just let 25 seconds go.
Right.
A fact that was never addressed by Rich Gannon.
That's a good point.
And I thought that was very confusing.
Right.
In his explanation. He made us all think that there was some sort of rule violation that Belichick had, and he was charged with the timeout. Not that he wanted the timeout, and I think that was misleading. Andy and I spent 15 minutes post-game trying to figure out why no one asked him, with all those times that he said, I was calling the timeout. Well, you seemed rather animated. I was calling timeout. Why were you arguing with him? Oh, I ran down there. They were waving me off. I called the timeout. No one asked him, why were you calling a timeout? Yeah. Not a hard question.
Right.
A legitimate question.
And not even a controversial one.
That's what I'm saying. Not
Explain
a hard
it
one.
To me. And I don't think any of the reporters who were there were, oh, well, wait, well, the clock's going to start. He's got to call a timeout. I didn't get that tone.
I didn't get that until I read the pool report. And when I read the pool report and I listened to the referee, and I apologize, his name is escaping me now.
Sheffers, I think?
Was it Sheffers?
C-H-E-F-F-E-R-S.
When he had the explanation as to the ball was going to be, the clock was going to wind on the ready for play, there's no option there. Bill had to call. It's not college where you set the sticks and the clock stops for a first down. There's no way he had of stopping the clock other than to call a timeout.
No,
he had to burn that.
I think you are right, Fred. I think they are starting to get annoyed or crack down on Bill. We've joked about it for maybe 5 years now that he seems to go anywhere he wants on the field, you know, out to the numbers, down to the goal line, looking at things, yelling at people. I think they're starting to get annoyed with that and try to crack down on that with him.
So then the final dagger is, you know, you're hoping that you get the ball back with some time, but then Will Fork has the penalty, and that gives him a new set of downs, and by that, then it's ball game. You know,
a little disappointed in that.
Yeah.
Both the actions and then him not showing up to talk about it after the game until his contractually obligated appearance on WEEI.
I don't know why you thought he was going to show up post-game. He doesn't.
Well, I'm disappointed by that.
I'm past being disappointed. It is who he is.
So
I think, especially in light of the fact that he was involved with a significant play at the end of the game that, as Fred accurately points out, eliminated any fluke. You know, maybe you could have had a Cal Stanford kick return with 10 seconds left. Because I think there only would have been about somewhere between 10 and 20 seconds left in the game, even if he hadn't gotten that penalty.
Right.
But he eliminated that. He allowed it to be first down over again. Now they can run it all the way down. Andy thought they were going to forget to call timeout. Andy was just not.
They're the Bills. Chan Gailey does not bring
confidence.
No, he doesn't. Those glasses, the way he looks over them, I don't care for it.
Andy thought for sure that Buffalo would screw something up in that whole situation.
Well,
and then right as they were kicking the field goal, Greg Bedard, our, you know, show friend, Greg Bedard, he tweets out, Lindell had short field goal blocked last week.
Well, that's good for the Bills. They lost 15 in a row. It won't be 16. So, fine. If you're going to lose to an AFC East opponent, I guess it should be the Bills. They're the team I hate the least. you know?
Normally, I wonder where he's going with these. That made all the sense in the world to me.
I'm actually happy for
degrees
the Bills
of hatred.
Buffalo fan. I mean, they live in Buffalo.
I know. That godforsaken.
Their team has been terrible forever. Whether they're really good or not, at least they're exciting right now. They're fun to watch. They have two huge comebacks in consecutive weeks. They have reason to smile on Monday.
They really deserve something for having to live there. I mean, we walked to the Anchor Bar, which is like a mile away from the hotel, Saturday night, and the streets are empty.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's like, you know, papers blowing around the street. You know, it's like deserted.
What'd you think of all the middle fingers we got on the bus ride in?
Well, that happens all the time. They're good.
Par for the course. Yeah. You're lucky you didn't have a beer bounce off your window.
I mean, you're literally allowed to, like, camp overnight there. You know, so these people are, they come up, they you know, they wash with a bucket of water, and they're ready to go on Sunday. They're, you know.
Although we do need to tell you, Fred, on the pregame social, one of our callers, Rochester fan club was set up there, had 20 plus people, and then a few more joined them, but their grill didn't work, and a Bills fan allowed them to use his grill. So it's not all bad up there. Bills fans and Patriots fans came together pregame, shared a grill.
Yeah, I don't think that they're not like the Oakland fans or Pittsburgh fans.
It was a good call, by the way. It was Dean.
No, we've had some lawsuits come out of fan altercations there. I mean, it's been pretty bad at times.
And they do treat us as poorly as we are treated in any road venue.
Oh, when you drive in.
When you drive in.
Sure, sure.
Or drive out.
Yeah.
And
snowballs, ice balls,
beers. It was funny, but not only that.
Asses.
The guy, it was Dean, who was the head of the Rochester.
Dean, that's him.
The Rochester fan club, Patriots Rochester fan club. He was also talking about how, you know, a bunch of guys were giving him a lot of crap and, you know, they were yelling at him, making fun of him and doing one thing. But then they would come over and they go, yeah, you know, Brady's great. You know, like even like,
right.
It was, you just know, unlike maybe in Oakland, maybe you get a battery off the temple.
Right.
You know, it's all in good fun. You know, we're rooting for our team and we're pretending we hate you, but We just want your team to lose. We don't really hate you. You know, we don't want you to die. Philly's it's not like a Giants Dodgers thing where
there are some fights there. You do read about a lot of fights. Bills
in Buffalo?
Fans, yes.
Well, maybe. But, you know, when alcohol's involved, anything can
happen. Yeah, post game. Well, that's what I joked with.
I will say,
but as a rule, the Philly fans are just mean curs.
Yeah, you mentioned that they let you camp out there overnight, and we did that. We brought an RV to Buffalo in '98.
Would you take a wrong turn at Matthews Arena?
So we did actually, we didn't spend the night in the parking lot, but we were able to put the RV there and get ourselves all set up. So first thing in the morning the next day, because we actually had a car with us, so we were all set. And fans were all over us. I mean, just making fun of us. And this is the height of, you know, Flutie Flakes in Western New York. You know, he had the Wheaties box and fans were all over us. They were tough. That was a tough crowd. I'd never had that amount of problems going to the Meadowlands for the Giants or the Jets.
Plus,
Buffalo
they always have
was
those
tough.
Big fires post game. Sometimes you see these fires that look like entire vehicles are on fire.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen. The reason why I'm not jumping off a ledge is because it's week three. I think they're going to get this defense straightened out, and it's not going to be as bad as it looks right now by the end of the season.
I hope not.
Yeah. I think they're going to make adjustments. It is a work in progress, and we'll see. It was a big change this year. You know, maybe we underestimate the type of change that they had.
I'll tell you what, we overestimated the performance in Tampa. Boy, did I put way too much stock in that.
Yeah, because you were 16-0 after that game.
Holy crap. What a waste that was, me thinking that was relevant in any way.
All right.
I was 16-0 as recently as the middle of the second quarter.
Yeah, we should share that midway through the second quarter, 21-0, Paul turns to me and goes, tell me again why they're not going 16-0 again. I go, because the defense stinks, Paul.
Yeah. All right.
And I agreed with that, but I just thought that the days of Brady, quote-unquote, costing them games were over. I didn't think that would happen.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. We have a ton of emails. Everybody's online. We'll get to the phone calls, emails, in a minute.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Is that bacon I smell?
Grandma must be cooking.
She makes everything with bacon. Bacon pie, bacon shrimp, bacon on the cob.
I know one thing that tastes better than her cooking.
What's that?
The new Bacon McDouble from McDonald's. It's made with two savory pieces of bacon, melty American cheese.
Mm, that sounds better than anything Grandma can whip up.
I heard that.
The new Bacon McDouble is here. Right now, you can get two Bacon McDoubles or two large fries or one of each for just $3.33. Price of single item posted on menu board. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be on?
That's it.
Go, Bruce!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops. Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
And now, story time with Fred Kirsch.
I had this dream. I was in this, it was sort of like a cafeteria setting with big glass windows, and a lot of people there were people that we worked with and like on the travel party. So we're looking, and there's this weather coming, and it's like dark clouds, and it turns into this tornado. So I'm like, everybody get away from the windows. We get away from the windows, and trees are coming down, but luckily nothing happened. So then that passes, and then we decide that, okay, dinner is coming soon, but a lot of us wanted to work out after dinner, so we're gonna, so this cafeteria turns into a hotel. And now a lot of us have to go up in the elevator to get our gym stuff, because after we eat, we're gonna work out. So we get in the elevator, and it's a bunch of people, and one of them's Gino. And Gino has no pants on, Gino Capoletti. and his unit is attached to his hip. And it was like, it was like a weird deformity. Like that no one knew, ever knew about, but there it was. It's like, and my thoughts going through my mind was, how does he like explain that to women?
Why are you having dreams about Gino's unit?
Thanks, babe.
It was
hang
attached to his hip.
While.
I don't care where it's attached. Why are you thinking about his unit?
I don't know. It was just a weird dream.
That was story time with Fred Kirsch.
Next week, you're going to tell Gino this story, right? Please.
No. And you better not bring it up either, Cole.
All right, welcome back to PFW in Progress. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. Tons of people listening right now. I can tell.
Okay.
Because the emails are pouring in and the phone lines are lit up. So let's go to it. Starting off with Eldridge from North Carolina. You're first up on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm with the guy on the radio. Man, that's the worst defense we've had in 8 years. The very worst. I mean, I'm calling you out. Sean Ellis.
I agree, Martin, 8 years.
Bolden, Bodden. Bodden's the worst cornerback. He can't cover nobody fast. Double moves, they got him. And like I said, we had all those draft picks. We could at least got Peterson. It's a lot better than Rajay Dowling right now. Looks a whole lot better. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's hard to argue right now that this defense is in a funk. They can't stop anything. And, you know, I don't know if it's just adjusting to the change that they've had or it's just a talent thing, but I, you know.
I mean, Sean Love was a beast for the Jets.
Right.
We need to clarify. But not he was a beast against the years. Patriots. Jets fans were not upset to see him go. Jets fans thought he stunk against pretty much everybody over the last couple of years, and he only had success against the Patriots. And all we saw was the Patriots games, and we assumed, okay, that's the guy we're getting.
And the concern that I would have is the age of a lot of those guys. And I'm wondering, especially now that you're a little bit thin on the defensive line, you know, you lost Mike Wright, and you lost Myron Pryor, and you're, you know, lost Albert Haynesworth. So some of that rotating that you had been doing, you weren't able to do, those guys were invisible. They were absolutely invisible, and you wonder if maybe they're a little tired.
A little tired? After three games? No. And,
if you're 34 or 35 years old and you're playing a full load, and when you're not used to playing a full load, yeah, I do think, you know, fatigue could factor in. Now, I think that it's a talent issue as well, but on Sunday, I think the pass rush was the worst it's been in the three games.
Yeah, I was sick after that second quarter when they started coming back. It seemed like they couldn't tackle. I guess that lead change went about 14 days to get on the practicing pad. Right now, they need all 14 days right now so they can start hitting somebody. Go.
They did miss a lot of tackles.
All right, Aldridge. Thanks for the call. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's go to Darius in Virginia Beach. Hey, Darius.
Hey, what's going on, Fred? What's up, fellas?
Oh,
hey,
you know, we're just trying to figure this team out here. What do you got? Can you help the Patriots right now?
Man, I got more questions than you guys got. I don't even get it. Boy, that was horrible. And the bad thing about it was the first time I took my son with me to one of these wings places, you know, to go and watch the game on the big TV. And we get to like the last 2 minutes, like, Daddy, the Patriots are going to lose.
Oh.
And I'm like, man, keep your head up. Come on, what you talking about? The game ain't over. Daddy, they're going to lose. And they lost.
They did indeed.
But,
how old's your son?
He's 12.
Okay, tell him it'll get better.
Will it? Will it? Or is he going to be one of the generation of kids who thinks you only win? And maybe we're on the beginning of this Eric Scalavino, you only lose.
This is the Patriots. It'll get better.
Well, I hope so. But I have a couple of questions, actually. Number one, I didn't understand why when they got down, it was in the fourth quarter, and they were on a 3-yard line. And the series or two before that, they had Ridley in, and he was doing well. And when they got down there, they put Ben Jarvis in. And I'm like, why? I mean, I understand that Jarvis, you know, is consistent, but really was doing really well when he was out there. So why not give him a chance? Yeah. Plus, he's supposed to be strong. So I don't understand why they constantly switched the backs like that when it wasn't as if
that's a fair second guess.
And it's funny because before people were saying, where's Ben Jarvis Green Ellis? Then Ridley started to show something. People were like, okay. They get close. I think it's a ball security thing. I think you want, at that point, the ball in the hands of a guy that you know is not
going to fumble.
That's
what it was. But I do think that's a fair second guess. And the possession before that was what Andy and I used this week for our Take Tuesday, where we kind of dissect maybe a little bit of a lesser-known element of the game as what we thought was a key factor. And the interception that Brady threw to Gronkowski, I thought Ridley was running really well on that drive.
Yes.
Which was what Darius brought up. And I agree. He had a couple of good runs on that drive, and that's when they all of a sudden they get down to the 23-yard line and Brady throws the pick, which I thought was not just a bad play, but a bad idea to be looking to throw the ball in the end zone. A field goal there was every bit as valuable as a touchdown.
Right,
and they already had the field goal and they risked it.
You're up two scores if you get the field goal.
And then they get down close there, and I'm sure that's what it was, what Fred said, Darius, is that maybe Belichick felt a little bit more comfortable with a guy who had been in the end zone a lot in Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. They knew his ball security is impeccable. You don't want to give a rookie a chance there to cost you a game. So I can understand what he was thinking there, but Ridley was running better on Sunday than Green Ellis for sure, no question.
Yeah, and then finally, the last thing is the play of McCourty. And I had a question, basically. It's a question and a comment. Is it up to the coach in the scheme, or is it up to the cornerback how they play, whether they play in the press or off? And the reason I'm asking that is because I thought the whole point of playing press or bump was to throw the receiver off their mark, to get them out of their route and throw them off their mark, so that when the quarterback's looking for him, the receiver's not where he's expecting them to be. And then number two, to give your defensive rush a chance to get pressure on that quarterback. And McCourty's not able to do that. I mean, every single time, if you watch it, whenever they show, you know, McCourty in coverage against the receiver, he cannot prevent the receiver from getting right off the mark. I mean, as soon as the ball snapped, they're in their route. He can't jam them at all. So I'm like, okay, why doesn't he play often and use his speed and athleticism there rather than trying to play, you know, bump and then get beat and they're just throwing over his head every single time? I didn't understand that. So I'm like, whose decision is that?
Darius, we're right with you. I mean, you know, Paul, or Andy, one of you were saying that 11 yards downfield, he was already beat. You know, and
but whose decision is it to play bump? That's a coaching
thing. Decision.
I mean, if you're in man or you're in zone or your techniques, that's going to be dictated by scheme, right?
But the rest of what Darius, you are supposed to disrupt the timing. You are supposed to give him problems getting off the line.
If you're playing press.
Theoretically, it does disrupt the entire timing of the play. Theoretically, if
that
you bump
was
him.
one of
the bump and run, he's got the run part down. They just run right by him, but the bump is missing.
Yeah, that the 11-yard touchdown, the first touchdown that Buffalo scored was the one I was talking about with Fred, and it was one of those sluggos that, you know, the slant and go, and he makes a little juke at the line, fakes the inside move, and 11 yards, he was 5 yards behind him. Just physically, that would seem impossible to be that far separated with that little area to cover, but. Listen,
when you're Ellis Hobbs, Devin McCourty.
It hasn't been a great three games for McCourty. I still maintain that the guy has ability and is in a slump, but I have to admit, after this week against what I thought were average receivers, he didn't look any better. And from what I'm told from you guys that were there, there were other plays that Fitzpatrick didn't see. The very first play of the game when he threw a bomb at the top of the screen to Stevie Johnson behind Lee Bodden, evidently David Nelson ran right by him on the bottom of the screen. We didn't see that, Andy, on TV.
Yeah.
And everybody was tweeting out, oh, Fitzpatrick just missed a sure touchdown. He had him 20 yards in the clear. So there are plays that aren't even showing up that he's getting beaten on that we don't even know about.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a technique thing with the jam, if it's a strength thing.
I don't think it's strength because he's not even getting a solid hand on.
Yeah, I don't know.
And one of the Chris Brown, I was struggling to come up with a name, the out of town reporter that we spoke to on the pregame social this week from Bill's Digest, he had mentioned one of Stevie Johnson's real strengths. He's not a burner. He's not a real fast guy, but one of his strengths is beating press coverage. And that was something that Andy and I were, you know, sort of put in the memory bank because we know how McCourty in particular really likes to use that style. Well, clearly that came as advertised because they didn't bother Stevie Johnson much coming off the line.
That was a good call, Darius. Next up on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398, is Chris with a TIAN. Christian, hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm glad.
Are you sure?
I'm okay. It's been, you know, almost 48 hours, so, I'm so glad I listened to the show, because everything you guys say is really what, and the call is too, is what I'm thinking. You know, for me, I'm just terrified that it's just bad across the board. You know, there's not, like, one area of the defense that I can look at and say,
it's a great they're point.
Good, they're solid. We can count on them. We can stop the run. We can stop the pass. Oh, if we just tweak this, if this guy plays, you know, a little bit better, we'll be okay. It's the whole thing. It's the rush defense. It's the pass defense. It's the coverage. It's everything.
Well, if McCourty did play 50% better than he's playing right now, I think they would have won this game going away.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be fine in terms of wins and losses. I think it's going to be, this is such a good offense that they are going to win games like they almost won Sunday just by bludgeoning you to death. And they're going to build leads, and most times 21-0 is going to be game, set, match. But I don't think it's disguising the fact that this defense is not good enough. Now, there's 13 more games to go, and things could change, but I don't see it. This is a 4-year problem to me, not a 3-week problem. This is an offense
right
that
on.
Is covered for a defense since 07, in my mind.
Right. Yeah, you're right on there. I mean, I called last week and I said I thought that there was the potential because of all the new faces. And Paul, you said that a bunch of times too. I think all
I honestly believe it. I'm not just spouting the company line.
I
do think there's room to grow with these
Belichick
guys.
But I think Belichick agrees with you, which is why we saw all the changes this year.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think it's fair, at least in week 3, to say this is the same defense we've seen in 06, 07, 08. Because it is so radically different, you know, let's give it a chance.
Worse.
That's the only thing I can say is, right, at this point is...
Yeah, I'm just not enamored with the talent, that's all.
Right, well, maybe
that's
not.
Why I don't think it's going to be... I mean, I think they can get better as they get more familiar with each other and whatnot, but I don't see... I'll give you an example. I was watching a little of the Monday night game last night. And that doesn't have to be these high-priced top 10 picks. There's a linebacker for Dallas named Sean Lee. Have you seen this guy play at all?
Exactly.
He's not a star. He's not a standout star by any means.
Yep.
But he's around the ball constantly. Every game I see them play, he's either picking a pass off, like he did in the opening game against the Jets. He had a huge interception in that game. Or he's just causing havoc.
Yeah.
Brandon Spikes is that guy for us.
Supposed to be.
And he's just doesn't look like he has anywhere near that ability. Nowhere near that ability, and
well,
he looks confused all the time. I don't know. I don't know the answers.
At least when Brewski first started, he'd run around and fall down, and he'd hit the ground. Spikes is just kind of standing there. It seems.
How many times do you see Spikes with his hands out by his sides after a play is over, as if to say, "What's going on? What do we do?" And Mayo looked like he was chewing his butt out a little bit on a couple of occasions. He's a liability in pass coverage to be sure, and I just don't think you need a thumping linebacker in today's NFL. I think Buffalo could, if Buffalo didn't fall behind so bad on Sunday, I think they could have racked up huge numbers on the ground if they wanted to. They just fell behind, and they couldn't, you know, I think, what did Fred Jackson have, 12 carries in that game? He averaged over 6 yards a carry.
Christian, you got anything else?
Yep. I just want to say that, you know, I think they'll bounce back this week with a win in Oakland. I know that's a tall order, especially seeing what they did to the Jets on Sunday, which I was very happy about.
I think they will too, Christian. I'm with you.
I think they'll bounce back. So it's early, but yeah, you definitely. very concerned.
All right. Christian, we're with you, but we'll stick together. It's Patriots Nation.
Yeah, I don't think the regular season has changed. The complexion of the season has changed for me. I am disappointed because I see a lot of the same stuff that I've sort of worried about over the last couple of years. And I wonder, you know, if that offense doesn't show up and struggles. Now, they didn't struggle to move the ball this week. It struggled with turnovers.
Right.
Different struggle than, like, the Jets game. It wasn't turnovers against the Jets that cost them. They struggled. This was struggling with turnovers. If that happens, can your defense bail you out? And you know, let's make something clear, too. And we talked about this in our little morning meeting. You know, it wasn't like you look at the end of the game on paper, the stats, and you say points off turnovers. Buffalo, I think, had 24 points off turnovers. Well, to me, 14 of those points came on touchdown drives of 95 and 96 yards. That, to me, is not touchdowns off turnovers.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Your defense should be expected to not allow points when the other team takes over inside the 10.
That's true.
And twice they went the entire length of the field to score.
Yeah.
That's not because of turnovers. Now, you could argue points that you didn't get.
Right.
Where you turned the ball over, maybe you would have won the game. Clearly, they would have won the game if they didn't throw four picks.
Right, going away.
They would have won it going away.
Yeah.
If they didn't throw any picks, yeah, it was going to be 28-7 at the half, 24-7 at minimum.
Right.
At minimum. But they did, and it just shows you, as great as Tom Brady is, you can't be perfect for 60 minutes for 16 weeks. Even Tom Brady. And I know I sound like a quarterback suck-up, and I'm a Brady apologist. That's all true. All of that is true. I'm a Brady apologist. But to me, how many times does he have to bail them out before they say, we need to find some answers as to why we can't get any pressure on the passer,
right,
as to why we can't get off the field consistently, as to why we can't get a big stop when we need one? Yeah. I mean, think about that 15-play drive that the Patriots tied the game with after getting an absolute sucker shot thrown at them with the game-tying touchdown 96-yard drive with the big penalties, followed on the next play by a pick six on the deflection.
And
you're down 31-24. And even after all of that, four picks right by your quarterback.
And that was
the
a
other
tough
team,
drive.
And I can only imagine how it must have been with after Florence's interception. It must have been a wild madhouse there.
Well, when Brady walked
and
off the field.
And he goes 15 plays on that drive.
When Brady walked off the field just before that drive and he'd just thrown the interception, he was like, all right, okay. His head was positive. He's like, we're going to get these guys. And sure enough,
that's how good that offense
is. They came down even, with a drive.
Even when they're playing.
They got Wes Welker, though.
Oh, what Welker made the drive because Brady wasn't his typical Brady self on that drive. Welker bailed him out a couple of times.
Right.
But I'm just looking at it as even when everything is going wrong, even in the middle of that drive, Ocho drops a short touchdown.
Right.
They still overcame that. They get down to the one-yard line. They get a penalty, a false start, to make it third and goal from the six instead of the one.
Right.
And they still overcame it.
Right.
And your defense allowed them to use three plays.
Yep.
3:30 left in the game. It took Buffalo three plays.
Right.
To get inside your one-yard line.
Yep.
That's unacceptable.
It is. It is.
That's unacceptable.
It is. It's disgusting.
That's why I can't just sit there and say, well, you know, Brady, oh, you got to give him, you know, yeah, we don't want to blame him, but, you know, the four picks, they win the game without the four picks.
They scored 31 points.
The defense lost the game.
31 points with four picks.
500 yards again, or 400 and change, whatever it was. 31 points. I'm sorry. That's got to be enough to win a game. Sean Ellis, by the way, stand up guy. You see what he's, I mean, he put it all on the defense. We got to find a way to get after some quarterbacks and put some pressure. 31 points is enough to win a game. We can't ask them to do all that for us every week. So it's not going unrecognized in there by everyone.
I'm sure there's some definite soul-searching going on among the defense. There better be. Chris in Stamford writes in, I'm disappointed.
Or else they'll answer to Fred Kirk.
Right.
I'm disappointed, but not too surprised. Oh, you're back with the show, Andy?
I was reading a little snippet. I finally say that the – remember we've talked about Holly's writing a book? Well, it's finally out there. I don't know if it's on newsstands, but it's The War Room. He followed 2010 season, I believe. He followed Belichick, Pioli, and Dimitrov, and it's about the Patriot Way taking over building teams and stuff.
Oh.
Apparently he was in the war room for the last draft. He spent one day in each war room.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know which day he was here, which day he was in Atlanta, which day he was in Kansas City, but that's the next book, The War Room by Michael Hawley.
Good for him. All right.
Those three teams are combined 3-6?
Chris says,
Just saying.
I'm disappointed but not too surprised with me with recent injuries, personnel changes, and disappointing play by some. It seems like this Patriots squad is out of whack.
Yep.
With that in mind, let's have a game of 1-2-3 rate.
Well, they only have two people missing, right? Haynesworth and Chung.
On defense?
Yeah.
And Hernandez. Oh, on defense.
I mean, those are your primary missings. And even Haynesworth's kind of been a rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could put Dowling in there, but to me, you can't count both Haynesworth and Dowling as starters.
Right.
You know, they're part of your core of defensive players.
I would actually just argue you're missing Chung because Haynesworth has been a rotational jag so far.
He's playing somewhere between, 15 and 30 plays maximum a game.
You can't say personnel moves. I mean, I know James Sanders would have looked good in uniform today making some tackles out there. You know, maybe on Fred Jackson when he's running down to the one-yard line. But you chose to let them go. It's not like you lost them in free agency or you cut them. You said, we don't want them. They're not good enough for our team.
And it wasn't cap-related.
No. It was time to move on. Well, I would have liked to have had James Sanders in uniform on Sunday.
1-2-3 rate?
1-2-3 rate. Rate the following groups of three Patriots from best to worst.
Did he stop because there was a Star Trooper on the screen? Because I just looked over and there was a Star Trooper or something.
Star Trek night. Star Wars night. Not Star Trek.
What is wrong with you? Now we can
Star
add
Wars.
Any Star Wars visual, any breasts, or any infomercial will keep Fred from conversing in the show.
Usually veteran signings. Men's abs usually stop him in his tracks.
I wish it were his abs. It's
I
about
like
6 inches
He's
south of the abs.
About breasts.
He likes junk. Men, junk.
Veteran signings, best to worst. Albert Haynesworth, Sean Ellis, Mark Anderson.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I have
one.
To say best is Anderson. He's got two sacks, right, in a rotational role. That's not bad production. And then I'd have to say Ellis next.
Ellis two
he's
and
he's
Haynesworth
playing.
Three. Right. Yeah.
Veteran signings, B, Chad Ochocinco, Andre Carter, or Josh Barrett?
The best would be
Well, thank God for Barrett. Or
Barrett's
they
not really
there.
A free agent sign. I mean, they claimed Barrett off waivers last
year. Neither
is
Ochocinco or Haynesworth, but I'm just playing along because it's the game.
But I mean, Barrett was last year.
No, I know, but the other two were trades.
The other ones are new.
So now we're comparing trades and free agent signs.
All right, anyway.
But none of those guys are any good.
Cornerback, Rozai Dowling, Lee Bodden, or Devin McCourty?
By default, I think Dowling has been the best.
But he didn't play on Sunday.
But he didn't play. That's,
he didn't have a chance to suck on Sunday.
And you know what? I heard a lot of people saying this yesterday. It's hard to look much better without playing than Patrick Chung did on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think he's been great in the first two games.
No.
But he certainly was better than the performance that we saw on Sunday.
Cut defender, Brandon Merriweather, James Sanders, or Tully Bannacane?
Sanders.
Sanders.
I mean, they had two safeties with no experience who couldn't tackle. Sanders, he had experience, a calming force, and he could tackle. I take it.
Yeah, Sanders, Merriweather, and then Bantakane.
Cut tight end, Lee Smith, Will Yateman, or Dan Gronkowski?
Irrelevant, all three.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyone else getting a 2002 vibe with a great offensive start and questionable defense? Hope they can turn it around out west.
That is what I'll be arguing a little bit later. There is a 2002 vibe to me. The only difference to me is I think that 2002 offense got solved, and then once it got solved, they were in trouble. I don't think this offense is going to get solved very often.
Well, you can't. I mean, Brady is 10 times the player he was then. I would say Rob Gronkowski is what I would now consider unsolvable. You can try to figure out how they're going to stop him, but he's physically gifted.
Right.
There's some point where it's just physical matchups, and they can't beat him, in my opinion, on physical matchups consistently.
Yeah, and Fred, you know, one of the things that we sort of argued about last week after the San Diego game was
it's not going to be no huddle, is it?
No. Was the Antonio Gates thing, you know, how much credit do the Patriots get for taking him out?
Yep.
And what you thought of that? I think that what you saw was this week, Deion Branch. I don't think Buffalo did anything, quote-unquote, to take Deion Branch out of the game, but he was a complete non-factor.
Yeah.
He had no catches.
Nothing.
And to which I think the Patriots say, fine, great. They had 500 yards, 31 points, 4 touchdown passes. You had 2 each to your top wideout and your top tight end. Shoot your best shot. Take take Deion Branch out. That's how I felt about with Gates the week before. And then the following week, the fact that he's inactive because of a foot injury to me only adds to the fact that San Diego went into that game all too content to throw the ball to Vincent Jackson. I think the Patriots didn't care that they couldn't throw the ball to Branch on Sunday.
Zach writes in, it's been now said 1,000 times, the defense isn't good enough. That is the story, and that's been the story since 2005. The questions to ask are why, can it be fixed this season, and can it be good enough in the postseason? If the answer to questions 2 and 3 is no, then nothing else matters, no matter how good the offense is. I don't remember the last time the league's top offense won the Super Bowl, and I don't expect that to change. So, yeah.
Are the Saints the top offense?
It just depends what you consider the top offense. I think there's been plenty of examples of great offenses winning titles. Colts, Saints, Packers, just to name a few recent ones.
But they weren't defenseless.
No, and that's the difference.
This Patriots team is literally defenseless.
You can't
right now.
Do any. You know, the whole, all the cliches to me are wrong. You know, defense wins championships. You know, in baseball, they say, it's all about the pitching. No, it's not. It's all about balance. The best balanced team will find a way to win. Even that Colts team that was terrible, terrible defensively all year. Well, they showed up in the playoffs.
Yeah, they did.
They played reasonably well in the playoffs. They got some great matchups for them.
Yeah,
some offensively challenged teams with Baltimore and Kansas City.
When the Oakland A's had all that great pitching, they also had guys like Reggie Jackson and Sal Bando.
Oh, back in the day. Those were great teams. But, you know, you look at some of the teams that like Atlanta has put out there throughout the Bobby Cox era in the 90s, and they had Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz, and they had the best pitching.
But they also had clutch hitting.
They could never win because they couldn't hit.
Well, yeah, but they – oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I'm winning at all I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, they
ended up winning. Yeah.
They won one, but they were there 15 years in a row.
Yeah.
And the reason why they fell short most times is because they couldn't hit.
Let's see. Pete in Hampshire, England, formerly from Wayland, Mass. And Wesleyan. He says, this is for Jake Steele. Okay, Fred, here's my logic. You'll be so eager to, one, tout the new iPad app, and, two, put in any content for Tuesday's show except last Sunday's game that will be not mentioned, that I will get a shout-out. Well, we talked about the game, but you'll get a shout-out anyway. Here in Old England, we're up earlier and thus over our hangovers earlier and can subscribe to the new app first, which I just did.
Nice.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks, Pete.
But what Pete says is that makes four games that will not be named now by my count. Last two one-and-out playoff losses, last Sunday's four picks, no spikes crooked. In England, we say bent. Refs fiasco. And, of course, the helmet catch Super Bowl. Want to spew now, just listing all four. So, thanks, Pete.
The list is growing at an alarming rate.
Let's see. Josh writes in, I've been listening to the show since 2007. I haven't emailed in around 2 years, but after the shocking defense start to the year, I have a few things I need to get off my chest. Firstly, Gerard Mayo. Last night I watched 50-year-old London Fletcher play. He made plays. Sean Lee, in his first season starting, made more plays in one game than Mayo has in his entire career. He covered tight ends. He broke up passes from running backs in the flat and had an interception. What does Mayo do? Tackle the running back after a 6-yard gain? In coverage, whoever recovers makes the catch every stinking time, and he tackles him after he makes the catch. I'm sorry, but our so-called star player, he doesn't play like one. The only two players that have shown anything this season are Wilfork and Chung. How can anyone argue that we have talent on defense? I'm fed up with people using youth as an excuse. There's no improvement. And Ryan Kerrigan, Anthony Spencer, guys we could have drafted, both made plays last night, but we didn't get them because they don't have the measurables. They may not be superstars, but they sure are better than Cunningham and Ninko, without a doubt.
I'm ready to maybe make it my declaration
Kraft and of being Mayo go together.
Being wrong on Kerrigan. I think he's pretty good.
You didn't like him?
I didn't like him much. I didn't hate him, but I was not. I wanted Alden Smith. If it was like the second tier guys after your boy, Alden Smith was a guy. And I haven't seen anything that Alden Smith has done, but he's also in Siberia, no?
I don't know. Where's he play?
Not in Jacksonville?
Once the draft ends, I move on with all these names.
Oh, no, wait. Where did he go? He didn't go to Jack. Someone traded up for him, right?
Did he go to Arizona?
San Francisco, maybe?
I don't know.
He might be in San Francisco.
San Francisco, so I haven't seen him play yet. But Kerrigan looks pretty impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
in short samples.
Alex writes in, I want to start off by saying that I still believe that the Pats will have a good season. However, based on the play of this defense, I think that we are in for yet another early playoff exit.
Then it's not a good season.
Our guys look like they don't even belong in the NFL. We can't tackle. We can't get to the QB. We can't cover. Brady has to score each and every time he hits the field in order for us to have a chance at victory, and that's a losing philosophy.
Yep.
We don't have a bend but don't break defense. We have a bend over and take it defense.
I don't think we can write that.
Even a mediocre passing game like the Raiders could have a great day against us. Until this defense gets a clue, I am not confident in any game we play, and unfortunately the only thing I see that will help this D is an offseason and free agency. As usual, keep up the great work, and go Pats.
That's what's mildly alarming, too, is not only are the players not good that are on the defense, but it was like a short-term fix. We thought they'd be good this year, and then you'd have to figure out what you're doing moving forward. They're not even good this year, and now you're saying you have to overhaul everything and find something for next year.
Because four or five of the guys that are part of your top, say, 15 defensive players probably aren't going to be here next year.
Right.
You're right. That's even more concerning.
That's not good.
Let's go over to the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Brian is in Brighton. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Brian.
Just trying to break this down, trying to give the Patriots some help here.
Group therapy.
Well, I'm calling, first of all, to pull a Paul Perillo.
Okay.
I was
gonna
wrong.
Eat?
Oh. Hey, nice job, Brian. Andy Hart could learn a lot from us.
What were you wrong about?
Yes, Well, I mean, I called earlier, and I was talking about how I really thought that this could be a great defense with that line and just pull a 2007 on the defensive side, but I mean that's clearly not the case.
Yeah.
But with that said, why are we so? Why are we so angry at the defense on this loss? I mean, why are people freaking out so bad? I think that this is kind of the PFW Andy Hart syndrome.
Hey.
Yeah, well, come on, Andy. You are a passionate guy, and we all love you, but we listen to you too much.
Well, that's your first mistake.
Well, I am certainly not guilty of that.
No, exactly. That's where,
I think we're on the defense because I feel like 31 points is enough to win a game, even when you turn the ball over.
I agree with Paul. I mean, yes, as far as this game,
both
sides were equally to blame, but every once in a while, the offense, you know, kind of, you got to give them a bad game. They can't do this every game. This was their bad game.
Three of those,
the defense couldn't bail them out.
On three of the four turnovers.
Hear me out for a second.
All right, go ahead, Brian.
My point is I never agreed with you guys on Fitzpatrick. When they tore us apart last year, I really looked at the guy and said, damn, he throws missiles. Now, yeah, he can be unreliable, he can throw picks, but that guy just, he throws it, and he throws it well.
Well.
Not that surprised.
Okay, but Brian, I don't care who you're playing. If you're up 21-0, you unleash the dogs, and you knock the guy down, you take some chances, you blitz him, you don't play back, you don't play soft. And
but you're up 21-0 in the first half. You keep scoring.
No. Yes, you keep scoring. But
they didn't.
They scored 10 more points.
Four picks. And some of them were freakish, and some of them were just...
No. I'm not absolving the offense's response. We all know that they win the game if they don't turn the ball over four times. I don't think anybody is going to argue that.
No, the question is, can they win a game...
If the other offense isn't
perfect.
Defense
helps. Or do you say they go 14?
Contribute. Just contribute. That's all we're asking.
Scoring. The defense was stopping.
The defense didn't stop Buffalo virtually all day.
Well, there was a stretch in the third quarter going into the fourth that they started to.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the first drive of the second half, the Bills went 3-and-out. The next drive, they went in and scored a touchdown.
And then two punts, and then another touchdown.
Touchdown, punt, touchdown, punt. That's not good defense. Every other drive.
No, overall. But there was a point where they did stop him a few times. But it's not nearly enough.
And again, give me the front page of the game book there, Andy, and read off the drives for Buffalo scores. 96,
Bills, 96, 66, 39, 95. The interception return for the touchdown, 70.
And 70 was really 80 because they got to the end zone and then intentionally went backwards. And also, the 66 at the end of the half was time constraint related.
Right.
I mean, if they had 30 more seconds, that would have been another 95-yard drive. Yeah. You can't. That's just bad defense. They allowed.
I'm not arguing our defense is good. And I'm just saying that I really think that the offense really blew it on this one.
They lost the game.
21-0.
They lost the game because the offense turned the ball over. I can't argue with that.
Yeah, but
anybody else's defense wins the game anyway. That's my opinion. I think 25 out of 32 other teams win that game despite with a 21-point lead before the interceptions happen. I think 25 other teams win that game with their defense. The Patriots are not one of them that's capable.
Good news is two of them that wouldn't play this Sunday.
This was my reference to the Andy Hart syndrome. Do you guys really not think that the Buffalo offense is that good?
No, I think they are good, but
I think they're all right, but they're not great.
I think when you go up 21-0.
I don't think they're great. But I think they're good.
And when are we going to stop saying it's because the other team is so good that we can't stop them?
Now we get Stevie Johnson as the guy.
That's a good point. But I'm just saying, I think Brady just, I mean, he had a terrible day.
Going into this game, if we told you that Fitzpatrick was going to have two interceptions in the first half, wouldn't you say Patriots win this game?
Oh, totally.
You know?
But
they still couldn't stop him.
If you told me Brady would have four.
Right, but they still couldn't stop him. With the two interceptions in the first half and a 21-0 lead, the defense collapsed. I hear your angst, Brian. Thanks for the call. You know, do you think that there was a chance that, you know, there was a letdown at 21-0? Like, you know what? Same old Bills, 16 in a row now, and there was – you know, there was a letdown.
Anything's possible. They're all human beings.
I'm not dismissing that. They are. And I'm sure that they felt a little bit. But they had the game by the throat at 21-7, driving at the end of the half when the first pick happens. It was just a bad throw. I don't think it was like, well, we don't really need to score here.
Right.
Because we have a 21-7 lead and it's the same old Bills. And this is 16 in a row. Tom made a bad throw. That's on Tom. It was... You know, Woodhead off, you know, way behind him, off his hand, pops in the air, and they make a good play. And that to me turned the tide of the game. That was pretty obvious. They go down and get a field goal to close out the half. Now you're back in the game. It's 21-10. It's not 21-0. There's a big difference there. Those 10 points were huge.
Yeah, I think that, Paul, I agree with you about the interception when the ball intended to Gronkowski. I said it right then and there. I think Brady went to the well one too many times there. I think they should have been more conservative, you know, kept it on the ground, settled for three if they had to, and gone up by 10 in the fourth quarter.
What's funny is Andy last week wrote, coming off the San Diego game, how impressed we were with that final drive. Up 7 to the Chargers at home. They took and look, they threw a long pass in that drive. It was a 9-play drive, 6 runs, right? 6 runs, 3 passes. One of them was like a 29-yard completion to Gronk. But I don't think it was the same kind of throw in that kind of traffic. I think he was wide open. It was a very safe throw. It was a blown coverage, I think, actually, by San Diego. This one, to me, they were in field goal range already. And a field goal, to me, ended the game. If they had first and 10 from the 23 with 10 minutes and change left, if they run the ball 3 times and get nothing, you're going to have about 8.5 minutes left and you're kicking a 40-yard field goal. To go up 10. I'm sorry. The New England Patriots up 10 with less than 10 minutes to go are not going to lose that game.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
They're
anymore,
not.
Paul.
I don't know why. Well, then you disagree with me then, because I feel if you feel like you're not sure, then they were right to go for the touchdown. They needed more points.
No, but
I think a field goal was every bit. I think 10 or 14 doesn't matter.
I think your way of thinking is even if the Bills come back right away,
they're not getting the ball back.
The Brady will then take care of business. Your offense will become your best defense.
Right. Now, either way, you would have had to probably survive an onside kick. But to me, fluky things have to happen for you to be in trouble.
No.
10 or 14
yeah.
doesn't matter to me.
No, I
thought that was a needless chance that they took.
No, I think in terms of strategy, I think that was glaring. Otherwise, it was just bad play. But as far as strategy goes, I think that was the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, and I think it's
strategic
easy.
Error. I think they
and Brian's right. Brian, the caller who just called in, Brian's absolutely right. They don't lose the game without the offense ultimately costing the game.
But at some point, can't the defense win a game?
Well, that's the point I was trying to make. But I think everybody saw the interceptions, and it's easy to say, well, that
sure.
killed you,
right? And it did.
I think it was a little bit more of a subtlety to say they were in field goal range. You had a sure two-score lead late in the fourth quarter.
Oh, that'll be a good one to point out in your little thing.
That's what we did.
Jeff from Connecticut's upset.
Thanks for reading.
He said, listen, this whole team's problem is talent. Look at how Ingram ran the ball yesterday. Look at Von Miller.
Ingram has been a remarkable bust so far. Can we say that?
He had a good day.
He had a touchdown. Right. First one.
Look at Von Miller. That could have been a Patriot. Dez Bryant, deep threat. There were all kinds of talent that could have been picked in the last couple of years.
How could we have gotten Von Miller? I feel like I'm Joe Patriot's apologist now. Wasn't he taken number two overall? Right?
Belichick is arrogant. He thinks his coaching will win championships. His defense is old and does not work. Now I'm more sick of them being so cheap and putting a talentless team on the field. Brady has two or three more years. He needs to put talent on the field because he is gone, and it's just Belichick. We are done. Well, I don't think cheap with what they signed Wilfork for and Brady for and
Sean Ellis.
You know, yeah, and paid Ocho Cinco. And, you know, by the way, we haven't even talked about Ocho Cinco.
Yeah, let's not.
It's cliche.
Poor Ocho.
I think at this point, it's,
leave him alone.
Yeah, you're kicking a guy that's down.
Right, literally.
Because he's off my radar now. He's neither on or, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's not part of the offense. I'm not factoring him in yet.
But that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
Because he was brought in, maybe not now to be a part of the offense, but at some point the expectation was he'd be a part of the offense.
Yeah, I just can't factor him in at this point.
Did you see the reaction of Tom Brady on the drop? Oh. There was none. There was none. And you know what that tells me? He didn't really expect him to catch it, or he kind of used to this happening, that it's not working.
I think he thought quick, and he didn't want anything on tape to show people that he was showing displeasure with Ocho Cinco.
See, I think he's better off pumping a fist there, slapping his hands, because in that, you thought it was going to complete. We missed one there. I think by showing no emotion, it's almost resigning yourself to the fact that's Ocho.
Well, did you hear the telecast? It was a good minute or so before the announcer knew that he had dropped the ball. They were all saying touchdown on TV. Did you hear that?
I thought I heard it, and I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was It was about on the Ocho drop. It was about a minute on TV before they actually knew he dropped the ball. They were saying touchdown.
I don't think so.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Clarification,
on TV?
Listeners?
On TV, because I had the broadcast in my ear.
I don't remember hearing that. He never even went into the end zone.
Right.
No, I swear to God, I'm not kidding. They were also
sure you weren't listening to the radio.
Yeah,
no.
I think you might have.
No, I had
CBS.
There.
Wasn't
we were
Gil
listening.
Santos?
No.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm not going to guarantee because I think Andy and I both yelled when Ocho dropped the ball.
Yeah, no.
So,
the announcer said touchdown.
There was a lot of things that happened. The first interception, the one that went off of Woodhead's hands, Marv Albert still hasn't recognized that was picked off. I mean, literally, Buffalo's offense was on the field in the huddle before he said the ball was intercepted.
And he still doesn't know Julian Edelman's.
No, he does not.
Edelman.
Yeah.
And evidently he called Lee Bowden Bowden once. I didn't catch that one.
Once is something, but he called Edelman 700 times.
The whole
times.
Game. He clearly thinks that's the way it's pronounced.
No, I think he cleaned it up at the very end.
Well,
after
Gannon,
I tweeted. I took credit
Gannon
for it.
Gannon kept calling him Edelman.
No, I know.
The whole game. And he kept...
Well, that's, you know how that is. You don't listen to me when we do our pregame show. The big stars don't listen to their co-hosts.
I wouldn't make a blanket statement that I don't listen to you. There are times where I am busy reading emails and whatnot,
listen.
And I miss things.
All you stars think it's only your voice that matters.
No, this week's...
Marv Albers from that school.
This week's factoid that I missed from Andy was when he was talking about the new turf in Buffalo being slippery. I knew vaguely what he was talking about, but I missed the beginning of it.
Well,
so
he was right about that. They were slipping.
Well, that was a big topic going into the game.
Dave from Rochester, New York. Does the defensive line seem to be back to reading and reacting and not shooting gaps like they did against Jacksonville and Tampa in the preseason? That's one question.
I don't believe so. I just think they're getting blocked.
Does Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots, not believe in having his defensive linemen stunt or twist? While watching the Buffalo game on the handful of plays where I paid attention to the defensive line, I did not see a single stunt, twist, or loop. It doesn't seem like our defensive linemen are winning the one-on-one battles against the offensive line.
They're not.
This is especially unsettling, given that both Miami and Buffalo had offensive line issues.
True. I don't think Bill is overly in love with a lot of games up front. I think when he does bring blitzes and different aggressive schemes, it's linebacker-related or safety-related. I don't think he's a big twists and all that crap up front.
I think they try to disguise who's coming. They make it difficult for you to identify which guy is actually going to be coming. But I agree with Andy. I don't see a lot of loops and whatnot.
Finally, in the paper where you provided the depth charts, four matchups are provided as key to the game. It would be nice to follow up in the next week's paper to mention who you thought won each matchup. That's not bad. Not a bad idea.
I think
maybe
it's
online we'll do
online.
That.
Yeah, that could be a blog entry.
Yeah. Because we have limited space in the paper.
Right, and the game is so old.
It's old by that time, yeah. But we could do one of those things early in the week.
What was the other thing? Oh, another idea that I thought might be good for the web or the blog is, you know, we do these weekly polls where we ask, you know, the fans, what do you think is the biggest need, blah, whatever. Go back and see whether or not the polling was correct in, you know, the answer that seemed obvious. You know what I mean? Paul's kind of looking at me like blankly.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I think
that's a longer term one. Go back a month later, not a week later.
Yeah, a month. Yeah. Like, when the answer's evident.
Right. Does McCourty stink week two and week 12? Well, you say, well, he's
there.
Got,
you go again.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think there's any question. Right now, he stinks.
Mr. Negative.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's fact. He stinks right now. I'm not saying he will always stink. He's destined to be a stinker. But right now, the here and now, he stinks.
He's not destined to be a stinker. No, that would be you.
Is that arguable? Have you guys not noticed today, by the way?
He's played poorly. He's played poorly. I don't think there's any way around it.
If you say he stinks, then that's his career.
No,
right
he isn't.
Right now,
he stinks.
Well. Right now, he's
right
not
now,
playing.
The performance right, okay. he puts on the field each Sunday for 60
yeah,
minutes
you have to justify.
Is
you have
piss
to,
poor.
You have
hard
to
argue.
Qualify it. You have to qualify it because he didn't stink.
I said
last
right now
year.
He stinks.
Yeah, I mentioned last night on Comcast because Andy and I had this was our argument, our trash talk last week on the PFW show on
Brought
Comcast.
To you by Waste Management.
So last night when I was with those guys at Comcast, I mentioned that, you know, Andy and I went at it last week and I had the pro McCourty side, and listen, it's not getting better, it's getting worse.
I don't even think his mother could argue the pro McCourty side right now.
Well,
we started thinking, you know, the whole joke about, you know, Jason McCourty plays for the Titans.
Right. Do we have the right one?
And he's got two picks.
He's got two picks and a forced fumble. He's played reasonably well.
So the Tennessee McCourty might be ours.
And everybody keeps saying, you know, as a joke, maybe they switched. And Andy and I were like, imagine if they really switched.
That'd be the greatest story
ever. Sports story ever?
Well, except for not if you're the Patriots.
No, but I'm saying like as a sports controversy.
That would be one of those things that goes in those books.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable.
Can you see, though, Devin coming back and telling Bill, I got a funny one for you. I played for the Titans this year. Can you imagine what Bill would do?
That would be unbelievable.
Yeah, that's why it won't happen.
Well,
it's maybe. Just the same as, you know, it'd be cool if they were having sex with his girlfriend and they switch it. Not really.
Well, I actually know of a story like that.
Sure
but
you do. No, everybody does.
No, I do.
Did you do it?
No.
Okay, then you don't know for sure. Here's where he gets mad. I do know.
I know.
Why do you have to disagree with him like
I
that?
I know the guy got arrested for it.
Ooh, how do they know?
But
did they do a DNA test? That wouldn't work.
You couldn't do it for...
Do they have the same DNA, Fred?
Sure.
Exact?
Not exact, but it's enough of a match to know that they're brothers.
No. I mean, if you did a DNA test, could you prove it wasn't one, it was the other?
I don't know.
You me DNA doesn't
right.
know.
You're the technical
what
guy.
What do I look like, CSI over here?
You love that crap. You read all these sci-fi books. You study all these sci-fi mags. And yet you know nothing.
DNA is not science fiction.
It's based in science.
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 Without
the title.
Fiction.
Right. So you only know the fiction. You know nothing of truth, of reality. I'm sorry. I thought
here
you knew
go.
Something about technology
go.
And advancement. So you only know fiction.
He gets called out for being an idiot, and that was...
Why am I an idiot? You're the one here who likes that kind of stuff and knows nothing about it.
Science. Fiction.
So all you know is fiction. You have no knowledge of the actual world.
Well,
is that right?
It seems you don't either.
No. See, I am the type of person that if I don't know something, I ask somebody that I think should know the answer.
People
and I thought
see.
You should know the answer. I'm giving you too much credit, apparently. Way too much credit. You're not nearly the smart man I thought you were.
Okay. I guess I don't know enough about DNA.
Science.
Science.
I thought you studied science and technology.
Sorry.
I give you credit for being an intelligent man.
Okay. Yeah. I never claimed to be a biologist. Okay?
No, but I thought you studied science.
My God.
I thought you were into that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess you're wrong.
Well, I am. Giving you way too much credit. Apparently, you're just a nut wizard.
I guess you're wrong. Jeez. Unbelievable.
You just can't make it up.
Ace Ticket Hotline, Anthony in Naples. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Well, nothing. I'm being accused of being a scientist, and I'm not.
Fred's a moron. Move on.
Because I don't know about DNA.
What don't you know about DNA? I didn't realize that.
I don't know.
Do identical twins have the same exact DNA?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Can somebody who actually knows the answer email in or call in? No, not strip. Well,
yeah, no, I'd like...
He's had a lot of DNA on his sheets.
Oh.
No, I'm pretty sure they don't have the same DNA.
No offense, but you're a pool guy. I'm not taking your word for it.
Well, you don't have to be a dink about it.
Yeah, he really is. you're absolutely right, Anthony.
If you want to measure, you know, I guarantee you I make more money than you.
I guarantee you do,
well,
too.
I can be assured of that. You could pull Annie and I together and you
hire
more than that.
You hiring? Is that a job offer?
No, I'm just saying.
I can skim with the best of them.
Wow, I didn't call up to get insulted like this, but that's fine.
You never know when it's going to happen around here.
Yeah, no. But yeah, honestly, you know why I called? And there's three things. I'm ticked off, first of all, because I blame the defense. I give them about 65%, 70% of the blame because, you know what, they should be able to stop somebody. It's ridiculous. You know, it's absolutely obnoxious that they didn't even slow them down, first of all. That's what really annoys me about that game. But I give the other 15%, all right, the 15 and another 15 to the offensive and defensive coordinators. Because, you know, when you bring... And the thing is, Paul, it seemed like you were going to get into this. Now, I don't know what the relationship is between you guys and Bill O'Brien, but apparently he doesn't deserve any criticism from you guys.
That's Paul's feeling.
No, I just... But wait a minute.
I think we just did.
Hold on. Yeah, no, I highly question the decision to throw the ball deep down the seam to Gronkowski with a 7-point lead and 10 minutes left.
Well, that's play call.
Well, okay, well, Bill O'Brien's decision to throw the ball down the seam deep while already in field goal range I thought was a bad one. I thought they should have run the ball there, grind the clock. I thought Ridley was running well on that drive. They had the ball for three plays. The first was an end-around for Welker. That was a 19-yard gain, which I thought was a good call. Obviously, anything that picks up 20 yards is a good call. But then Ridley ran for 8 yards and then 4 yards for another first down, first and 10 at the 23-yard line. I don't think that was the time to take a shot in the end zone. I thought that was the time to work clock and make sure you get a 2-score lead. So that's on the offensive coordinator and Brady, not just Brady.
Yeah. My thing is with Bill O'Brien, he coordinates it. Like I always make fun of Rex Ryan. I say he calls the defense like a guy that calls the defense when you're playing Madden.
Yeah.
You know, you blitz all first three downs, and then you know what? You play a cover on the fourth down if you're going for it. And that's the way I think Bill O'Brien is. He feels like, you know, Brady's his little toy. You know, like, oh, I got to use Brady. I don't want to insult Brady.
I know, but come on, Anthony. If you got Tom Brady, you're not keeping him in the cupboard.
That's the attitude. That's the problem. I know we have Tom Brady. He is fantastic. He is great. But sometimes when you need to run the ball, run the damn ball.
See, I agree with this. The reason why you're probably saying that we never criticize the offense is because the offense almost never deserves criticism.
Right.
But I think in this case, Anthony, you're right. I think they should have run the ball there, and I think they're occasionally guilty of relying too much on Brady. That's both Belichick and O'Brien's fault. I agree with you on that.
They go to the well too often.
Yes.
It's like, great, fantastic, it
yes.
worked. But when you're up 21-0, why are you still slinging the damn
Well,
thing?
I'll give you an example of how I'm not always in favor of the offense, and I got made fun of mercilessly for this. In week one, I didn't think it was a good move to drop Brady back in the end zone and have him throw a bomb into double coverage for a 99-yard touchdown because the safety took a terrible route. They got away, they got away with it. I don't think that's the way you close a game out.
No, I absolutely agree. You know what? Sometimes it's okay to play conservative. And you know what I'm annoyed with, too, as in the defensive coordinator, BB, okay? The thing that aggravates me about him, it's like he wants to play this passive you know, non-aggressive defense, allow them to go down the field, but what's the point when they score anyway? You know what? Throw your balls in the wind and go after the damn QB. It's like you're going to lose anyway if you play this type of defense. You might as well put it all in line.
Well, part,
it's obnoxious.
Part of the problem now is the whole bend but don't break.
Is
the
breaking.
Theory is, no, but it's not even that anymore. It used to be, okay, you're trying to make them go 8, 10, 12, 14 plays. Now they're getting 20, 30 yards a pop, and it's, are they going to make a mistake right. in the three plays they need to drive 90 yards? No, probably not. You're not making them use any plays.
The big plays this year are killing them.
Well, I just wanted to ask you that. And Fred, this is a football question. I'm not sure if you're an expert in the area
more
of football.
More than half the amount they allowed all year. Good stuff, Anthony. More than half the amount they allowed all last year. Over 20 plays.
Well, I don't care
like
about that.
That.
They
Did
list...
you just say the big plays?
I know. You just dismissed
Yes,
it.
I had a question, and you interrupted me before I could ask the question.
So everything you have to say is irrelevant.
That's true.
No. But when someone says,
yes,
and that's what I wanted to talk about, and Paul
All right.
answers.
All right, just say it.
No, I don't want him now.
His head, oh, now he's going to oh,
sulk. Playing the role of Eric Scalavino.
Playing the role of Paul Perillo, who originated the sulking on this show. I'm going to sulk now, so move on.
Oh, my God.
The stripper sent you the call.
You can't,
you
you can't even identify who interrupted you. Fred interrupted you first.
Well, to get rid of Anthony. That's his job as the host. I have no problem with that.
Okay, so it's okay if you interrupt him. It's not okay if I do. I get it now.
For the function of the
Anthony,
show, yes.
Just read what you were going to
read. No, I don't have anything.
No.
Can you play the
Did
call?
I just call
Why?
You
yes, can you play the call now?
Because
strippers sent it to you.
Can you play that, Kevin, the call for
he
the
has
touchdown?
No idea what you're talking about.
I mean, not for the touchdown, for the drop.
I'll find it. Hang on.
You can find it in the email that he just sent you.
While he's finding it.
In bold print. Fred, here is the bold print CBS call of the bold print drop.
Yeah, I got the same thing Andy got.
See if you can find it.
David says, I've listened to for 5 years but never subscribed before. I just got my first job out of college today, and this was my first purchase, the iPad app. But I've got a question game for you. By what week will Chad Ocho can't catch a ball get cut?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's going to get cut, but I think it's more plausible.
I just think there's too much money at stake. But, you know, I read Chris Gasper's column today in the Globe. It was three games of ineffectiveness for Joey Galloway a couple years ago, and then three games where he was inactive, and that's when he got cut.
Yeah, but
I just think,
totally different expectations.
I just think there's too much at stake here.
I mean, Joey Galloway was a one-trick pony at his best. And was brought in, I think, to be the one-trick pony. I think Chad Ochocinco was brought in to be here for 2 or 3 years as a legitimate 80-catch option for part of the offense. So I think more invested.
He hasn't been any more or less effective.
No, I'm not saying that. But it's just like a first-round pick versus a fifth-round pick. If Lawrence Maroney had been a fifth-round pick, he would have been cut earlier. If Brandon Merriweather had been a fifth-round pick, but you're invested. There is a projection and there's an investment. You've invested time, money, and planning into Ocho.
To me, it's the money.
I think Galloway was brought in as just a
guy. I agree with that.
I think he's no different than Alex Smith at tight end and just these guys.
But I think despite that expectation, had they given him a Sean Ellis contract where it was $4 or $5 million, I don't think they would have cut him.
Well, yeah, but you only would have given him the contract had you had the expectation. You know what I mean? They go hand in hand.
No, but I'm saying you can give a guy a one-year deal for more money than you really want because it's a one-year deal. I think they would have gotten rid of him. I think they wouldn't have gotten rid of him, I'm sorry, because of the money. I think they wouldn't have just thrown that money away, and I don't think they'll get rid of Ocho for the same reason.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of saying the same thing.
Joel in Merrimack writes in, good show as always. That Bills game was memorable on several levels. First, we should congratulate Tom Brady for setting yet another record. Then, least we forget, we should congratulate the defense. Oh, no, they were not going to stand on their laurels.
I bet you they'll set some records at some point.
Yeah, and be satisfied with being the 31st-ranked defense in the league. They took stumbling and bumbling to new heights and managed to find their way right down into the very bottom of the basement. Wow, no pressure, no coverage, and no tackling. They have definitely nailed down the recipe for failure. Now, if this D is a WIP, what does that mean? Oh, work in progress. Then the only progress should be to fire most of them. If we field the same defense this week against the Raiders, I will be picking Oakland. Now, here's the next fun little thought. What happens if the Raiders decide to double Welker and Gronk? No-show Stinko is quickly turning from a non-factor into a liability. No Hernandez, no two tight end sets. And no Price. And if you have to rely on Edelman and Woodhead, you're in trouble. Fred, you say it's bit time to worry? I don't know, maybe not time to worry. I have to respectfully disagree. This D is what it is. We're not talking rookies who are trying to figure things out. We're talking veterans who aren't getting it done. I always hold out hope, but this D has got me seriously worried. If we can't score 40 points a game, we can't win. So, you know, that's what Joel and Merrimack
I'm not as worried as that, but I understand what his point is. What record did Brady set this week?
Most yards ever in three games.
Oh, okay.
And three games to open a season.
SID stats?
It's kind of the same.
Let's see. Giovanni in Chandler, Arizona. Here's something I brought up on the PFW Facebook page and caught some heat for. I'm not sure why. Nate Solder is causing some grief to the production of this offense. He's a solid rookie, but he has an issue that is causing some hiccups. If you remember in week one versus Miami when Brady had a 28 or so yard pass to Welker to get down to the 1 yard line just before halftime, the Patriots could have scored a TD after that and gone up by another touchdown, but instead the play gets pulled back because of a Solder holding call and we have a missed field goal. This week we're up 21-0 and Tom Brady throws a 38 yard pass to Gronkowski to move the Pats all the way down, way across midfield, but what happens? Solder gets an illegal use of hands penalty and the Pats punt. Not saying it cost the game, but maybe the game would be a little different if the Pats were able to score again, go up 24 or 28-0. Or maybe it would be different. Who knows? But what I do know is a touchdown is better than a missed field goal, and a 38-yard pass is better than a punt. What do you guys think? As always, the Jets are garbage. Andy is awesome. Ken Walter rocks.
He is a rookie.
Well, let's talk about penalties.
I also would much rather have him protecting Brady the way he has in the two games that he started. I with Solder, and listen, I'm not advocating getting penalties, but if I have to sacrifice a penalty a game for the 50 or 60 plays that he protects Brady very well, I'll take that swap because there's been very little pressure. What little pressure Buffalo had on Sunday came from the other side. I thought Light struggled a little bit with Merriman.
Made him look like the old Merriman on one play.
So I'll take the penalties, you know, as long as they're not too bad. And, you know, two in two games to me isn't terrible.
But overall, penalties have been hurting this team.
Oh, God.
All year. Yeah. All three games. Yeah. Absolutely. And Bill's been on that.
Yeah. Sam from Glendora, California. A few things on my mind. First, the positive. You know your QB is good when he throws for 380-plus yards and four TDs and he had a horrible day. The negative, he threw four interceptions. That aside, I am on board with y'all because the defense were not able to bail us out when we needed them the most. I mean, I still love the team and will always love the Patriots, so I am not overly sad or upset or pissed or whatever emotion people are feeling. My last comment is about Chad's comment. I let one go. It's football. Maybe it's me, but I didn't see any remorse there. And you guys are right. It was obvious Brady wasn't happy with the Ocho dropping that sweet TD pass. I pray the defense steps up, and all I say is on New Year's Day we can exact our revenge. Truly, the cliche phrase that revenge is a dish better served cold will come true on a cold, snowy day, winter day, New Year's Eve, or day, whatever it is.
Now the only question is, like, could that be game be for the division or for a playoff spot?
Yeah,
or,
it could be.
I mean, the longer
all
the Bills go, you got to take
them
seriously.
All of a sudden, we're flexed out of a 1 o'clock game.
Well, they got the Bengals this week, right? So, theoretically, you know, I know it's hard to say they should win that game.
Oh, by the way, Marvin Lewis is guaranteed a win for the Bengals in that game.
Why?
I don't know.
Why would he just come out and guarantee a win against the Bills?
I guess he was really emotional in a press conference and said, we're going to win this game.
Okay.
Who are they playing?
Bengals.
Marvin Lewis is declared.
No, the Bills are playing the Bengals.
Yeah.
Oh, the Bills. That's what I'm asking. Who right. are they playing? They're playing the Bills.
Yeah, the Bengals are playing the Bills.
Right. Yeah. No, the answer is to my question was the Bills, not right. the Bengals. Oh. They couldn't be playing each
tuned
other.
Tuned out again, I think. For
no, I obviously I asked who are they playing. And the answer was themselves.
Speaking of comments and bulletin board material, I know we don't turn the page to the Raiders until tomorrow, but everybody seems to be drumming something up that Rolando McClain called the Patriots a finesse football team.
Yes.
Isn't the definition of a finesse football team generally thought to be you're a passing team, you don't play defense, and you don't run the ball? I don't really consider that a shot at the Patriots because this just in, you don't play defense and you don't run the ball. You're a finesse team. Whether you like it or not, that's how you've been constructed.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can turn that into bulletin board material when, I mean, that's like Rolando McClain saying Tom Brady's their quarterback.
Yeah, but no one wants to be called a finesse team.
Then you shouldn't have built a finesse team.
No, but I think they look at it as defense, too, stopping the run.
It's true.
You know.
Fred, they don't play defense and they don't run the ball. The Pittsburgh Steelers are a tough-nosed team. The Baltimore Ravens, why? Because they ran the ball and they played defense. The Patriots could not be attached to either of those descriptions.
It's still an insult.
Why?
Because no one wants to be called a finesse team in the
NFL.
Would
the 2007 Patriots, had they won that final game, been okay being called a finesse team when they were the greatest team in the history of the league?
The Colts were called a finesse team the year before and won the Super Bowl.
But they don't like it. I'm just telling the team.
Well, then don't construct your team that way.
It might be true.
Don't get a bunch of little slot receivers, throw the ball over the field, not run and not play defense.
It might be true, but I think that, you know, every team wants to consider themselves tough.
Then they should build themselves a tough football team.
Well, that might be the case. I'm just saying it's still an insult.
I don't. What?
It's still you don't want to accept it. It might be true. But you don't want to accept it.
It's not accepting anything. It's by design. They designed finesse team.
I don't remember the Colts. I mean, everybody calls the Colts a finesse team. I'm not sure I remember a lot of whining about it. I think that's what they construct. They were constructed as a passing-oriented offense that didn't line up and punch you in the mouth.
Right.
That's what they were, and they won a lot of games doing it.
This Patriots team is as finesse as can be.
And that's what this team is. They're going to win a lot of games doing it, too.
Lyndon says, twins share very similar genes, but identical they are not. The discovery opens a new understanding of why two people who hail from the same embryo can differ in phenotype, as biologists refer to a person's physical manifestation. Sorry, I didn't know that, Andy. My God.
I now know it and don't know it. So why are they called identical twins if they're not identical?
Breaking news. Did you know you were leaving Friday afternoon?
Yes.
I knew you figured
and
you
the
would.
Hits keep on coming.
Yes. Belichick, I guess, admitted that today. You would be leaving Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And for it's quitting time a little bit early for Andy and Paul on
Cue
Friday.
Cue the complaints from the media to the Patriots for having one less day of access.
Screw the media.
That's what I say.
My guess is you won't get one less day of access. My guess is you'll have access and then they'll leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think so?
Yeah, we've had access on day of trip before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Gene in Daytona, Andy finally acknowledges Paul. I'm glad to hear finally Andy recognizes true talent. I think I heard same Paul was a star, something like that. Fred, does it count in push-ups if Andy uses Tyrannosaurus Rex arms to beat you? He did have a decided advantage only having to go halfway up. It's true.
Well, I'm like the football schedule. You can only play the games assigned. I can only do the push-ups that come with my arms. And by the way, Fred's fat shoulders hit the floor first.
Three sports.
Shut up.
None of which were really sports.
Still, it was an athletic endeavor in which I won.
It was an ass kicking is what it was, Fred. I got to give you the nod.
That's right.
I'm not going to fight anymore because even when I double him up in a sport, he considers himself the winner somehow.
Now push-ups are a sport.
They're as much a sport as horses.
Can I tell you, this is one of my more enjoyable shows ever.
Things up and put them down.
They're as much a sport as horses. Anything where you compete.
Same amount of time, he had twice as many push-ups.
Which means I kicked your ass.
Which means you cheated. Oh my God.
I've never seen such a sore loser in my life.
Steve in Killeen, Texas says the first half of this game was all things hoped and prayed for as a Patriot fan.
Right, that's when Paul had him 16-0.
The execution of the game
halfway through the second quarter
appeared to be flawless. Brady's uncharacteristic interceptions aside, because I feel like he was able to drive the ball back down the field and get back points, it was the penalties and missed opportunities in the red zone. By my count, there were 21 points left on the field in that game. The two tip passes in the red zone that resulted in interceptions, and of course, Ocho's bad hands moment that without a doubt would have been a TD. But didn't they score on that drive anyway?
They did, and there was only one tipped pass in the red zone.
I also feel as if McCourty is overmatched in every possible way as a defensive back. I'm not jumping off the ledge, but to have the wheels come off in the second half as they did was frustrating at best. Go Pats! Oh, and if I sent a gallon of Dave's ultimate insanity to John Rook, would you be game to set up some Texas-style wings?
Isn't that super ridiculously hot stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I know Eric bought some sauce for John Rook at the Anchor Bar.
Oh,
John Rook. Asked him to pick up some sauce, and he did.
Eric knows about sauce.
See now.
Can I ask a dumb question? We always do this every once in a while.
You do all the time.
Shut up. Yeah.
lubricants.
Especially when I ask you anything, assuming you have the knowledge to answer.
He can never just let it go.
Nope. You brought it back up.
He can never just let it go.
How many players on this defense would you consider very good? That could, and by very good, I mean they would go and start pretty much anywhere. Be competitive for a starting job pretty much anywhere.
At this moment in time, two.
You don't want my answer.
Two. Will Fork and Mayo.
Okay. So we've cut the bait on McCourty.
I said at this point in time. Beginning of the season.
Well, you just yelled at me for saying he sucks, and now you're saying he's not that good.
No, I think he yelled at you for definitively saying he stinks. In other words,
right
from
now,
heretofore going
I
forward,
the exact sentence was, right now he stinks.
Well, you didn't say that initially.
No, I did, actually. I said, right now he stinks. The words right and now
I was talking
immediately
over him.
Preceded him. Stinks.
Yeah, I guess so.
So how come I can say he stinks right now, but you think he can't start for any other team?
Because right now, I agree with you.
And you didn't even say that. You said he couldn't start for every team. I spin it, and you don't even know when I spin it. My point is...
I'm not even listening. I mean...
How long...
You didn't hear what I said. It's unbelievable.
How long do we go saying Bill Belichick's a genius, and Bill Belichick makes every defense better and every defensive player better, before we say maybe he doesn't?
Well,
maybe he makes certain players better.
If it wasn't
certain styles better.
If it wasn't for Belichick, they would have given up 60 points.
I don't know that to be true.
I do.
And the reason I'm asking is you have guys that I generally assume. I'm going with four guys that I think are legit players on this team. That's the two you named, Mayo and Wilfork. I include McCourty. I've seen enough that he should be able to compete and be a playmaker in the NFL. And Chung. Now, he wasn't on the field on Sunday, but I'm including Chung in that mix. Maybe Bill doesn't utilize their skills. Maybe they would be better suited in Greg Williams' scheme or Rex Ryan's scheme that whoever was talking on the phone earlier said it's, you know, blitz, 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 and then play cover. Maybe they are athletic guys that are more suited to a different scheme, and Bill's not willing to go there.
Well, we thought we were going to see that. We thought this year was
the year.
Yeah,
but we haven't.
No, we haven't.
And maybe Bill isn't willing to go there with that aggressive, attacking, athletic, we're going to give up some plays, but be damned, we're going to make some.
And I will say that
I think with this offense, you would be willing to take.
Because if I give up a touchdown, Brady will get it back.
You know, it's the opposite. Sometimes when you have a really, really good defense, you're willing to just grind it out.
Right.
Because you know that it's the opposite here. You would think with this offense, you'd be willing to take some chances.
I would be because not only do I know he's going to score when he has the ball, if I give up a play, okay, he'll match that. But if I get him an extra chance with a strip sack, a fumble, an interception,
right.
Game, set, match, because
right.
I just won.
Right.
I just stole serve or whatever
right.
you want to call it.
Right.
I would be more aggressive, and I'm wondering if some of these players are better suited to be more aggressive.
I'll be interested to see what goes on in Oakland because, you know, Campbell is...
Terrible.
Yeah, and so you would think that maybe you put a little pressure on this guy and...
But he won't throw picks. He hasn't thrown picks in his career.
He just...
We were talking about on the way out. That's what he does.
He doesn't throw
touchdowns, but he doesn't throw picks.
I won't be shocked if they come out with a more aggressive nature on defense in this game.
Well, a draw to McFadden will put seven
on
the board.
I think the morale of the team, I think you need to do that.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
You need to get back to that Tampa display that, not the whole game, but a play where they're all excited, they're celebrating big plays, they're jumping up and down, and they're like, we can play defense. Because one thing they lack beyond talent right now is swagger. And I know everybody hates that term. Swagger. What's swagger about? I think you have to have some swagger in football. I think it's a front runner sport. I think you can bully people. I think momentum means something.
Yep.
And I think you can get that rolling. And they don't have it rolling right now. They have the opposite.
Yeah.
They have doubt. They have doubt in every one of that player's mind.
They've had trouble the more aggressive they've been so far in the early going.
Yeah, and that's fine. But
I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't be more aggressive. I am tired of the read and react. I'm tired of sitting back. I'm tired of bend but don't break. I just think that quarterbacks nowadays are too good for you to assume that they're going to make it. This is not Pop Warner football where if you can make them go 10 plays, chances are there's going to be a holding call or a false start, and that's going to self-destruct the drive. It doesn't happen in the NFL that often where you rely on the other team to beat itself.
Unless you play the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, but even then, that didn't happen. I mean, it's a bad way to me to play. Hope the other team makes a mistake. But in Bill's defense, they've blitzed and gotten burned a lot. And most notably in the big Fred Jackson play, that was a blitz, and they had the perfect call. They went right to where Mayo blitzed from and had it wide open. The larger question that you ask about Bill in defense, I have a hard time escaping the fact that when he had Lawrence Taylor, Harry Carson, and all those Hall of Fame players, he had a great defense. When he had, you know, Richard Seymour and Willie McGinnis and Rodney Harrison and Teddy Bruschi, they had a great defense.
Ty Law. Samuel.
When he hasn't, he's just like everybody else.
Well, you got to have the players, yeah.
No, but the issue
is... But is he a genius, or did he have a great...
Those players all left, Fred, defense. And were still good. Asante Samuel's still good. Richard Seymour's still good. We know Rodney Harrison was good before he got here, right? We know that Willie McGinnis was good under multiple regimes.
The core of the defense...
Ty Law was good under multiple regimes.
I would say that Willie McGinnis had a resurgence.
That may be true.
But the core of their defense in those Super Bowl... Andy's 1,000%
they were good,
right.
Regardless
were
of
good
who was their
he
coach
got here.
Or where they went. Even the guys we've seen leave now were good.
Yep.
The only thing that hasn't been good without them as a core is Bill's defense for the last 5 years.
We're still recovering from the Scott Pioli personnel days.
We're not recovering well because the Bill Belichick personnel days of Brace and Cunningham and Butler and Wheatley and...
Will
Height, 2 sacks in Denver.
We'll write this ship.
He would lead this team, wouldn't he?
We're going to write this ship.
He'd be tied with Anderson.
We're going to write this ship. I thought he said the other thing.
Ed writes in, when was the last time the Patriots developed a defensive player to his full potential within the last 4 years? Is our evaluation of talent in the draft subject to a reevaluation of the decision-making paradigm? We keep playing rotating players on defense every year. The Ravens found a receiver, Torrey Smith, which looked great and was a low draft pick. Why can't the Patriots find talent like this?
He was a low draft pick? I thought he was a second-round
third?
Pick.
Oh,
I mean,
maybe? Second,
I would say that, you know, Gronkowski and Hernandez,
he said
they're
defense,
pretty talented.
He said
defense.
Well, okay.
And that gets back to my question of Mayo. Is he as good as he can possibly be, or is he a good player who should be great athletically?
And I give you Mayo. I think Mayo is a guy that has been developed, and that he was a good pick, good player, good talent. What they saw, I've seen.
No, but...
But there's a lot of other guys that, you know, Cunningham,
I'm
still scratching
my head. Is he
worth a
top 10 talent? Is he worth a top 10 pick? Has he developed into a...
You can make an argument.
What you're saying.
You can make an argument.
He's saying
no.
Like you maximize the pick.
You can make that argument. Yeah,
Merriweather.
Sure.
You didn't maximize any of these second round picks that they've taken on the defensive side of the ball. They all, chunk. Other than that, they've all failed to.
That's
live up
the
to
reason it. Why your defense is struggling. Is from 08 to now, you've hit on very few of those defensive picks. Very, very few.
Marcus in D.C. says you are my favorite Patriots radio show, and I really hate to ever miss a minute. However, today. You guys are being ridiculous. This is not just reactionary. You're being psychotic. One.
It's Fred's fault.
This is not the worst defense in the Belichick era. It's game three, and they were without the best player in the secondary, Patrick Chung. Relax. Two.
Wait,
Paul,
I was holding the first two games against them, too.
Two. Paul, Sergio Brown did not hug the receiver. The receiver grabbed Sergio. He didn't allow the receiver pass because the receiver was in his chest holding him and couldn't move.
That's
a terrible call.
That's a penalty.
It was a terrible call. I think you should probably review the tape before you make such a strong claim.
Why do people operate under the premise that we don't watch the games?
And three, lastly, yes, this was a needless loss, and the defense did look pretty bad, especially the corners. But let's be serious. The loss falls squarely on the offense because when we had the chance to put the game away multiple times up 21-0, we turned the ball over or made stupid penalties. So... I mean, I think
I'm not arguing with the last point.
I mean,
but
for anyone to say the season's over, they're not going to win another game. That's reactionary.
Whoa.
That's ridiculous.
Who said that?
No,
that's my point. I'm going to argue that we haven't been reactionary. Yeah. It's quite the opposite. But this was a fluke. You turned the ball over 4 times and lost a game that you were thoroughly in control of. Fred's word "needless" is perfect.
But
it was
I don't
a
think
needless
it's a fluke.
Loss.
I think the issue is we've said all along this regular season is almost meaningless. And if you're capable of the performance you put up yesterday, 3 straight weeks. You've been bad on defense. You're going to lose in the postseason. You have no chance to win
games. That's where I say that the word reactionary is wrong because Andy and I said the same thing after week 1. We said the same thing after week 2. It's not the result that we're looking at. It's the performance. And I don't think this performance is good enough. Now, listen, there's 13 games left. So in week 8, if we say, you know what? The last 3 or 4 weeks, what I've seen on defense, I think this defense can contribute to a Super Bowl. Maybe we change our minds. Based on what we've seen so far, I see a lot of what we saw last year and what we've seen the year before. It's a great offense and a suspect defense. I don't think you can win 3 straight playoff games doing that.
But it's hard to say at week 3 in any season with any team, this is who this team is.
Exactly.
So, you know, you got to just
That's
be
why
careful.
I don't think we're being reactionary. We're not ending their Super Bowl hopes now.
Mike, I do think it's the worst defense I've ever seen here.
Mike in Wilmington says, I'm still depressed from the performance on Sunday, but just wanted to let you know that the new iPad app is great. I signed up for it as soon as it came out on Thursday.
Thank you.
So I do want to remind people that, yes, the iPad app is available in iTunes. All the PFW content is in it. So if you want to support this show, that's the best way to do it besides buying us lunch.
Obviously. No, that's a better way to do it.
Yeah. It's a more long-standing.
I like the ability in the future to buy my own lunches, and I have that ability thanks to my paycheck, so I'd like to maintain a paycheck.
What do you what'd you guys think of Michael Vick's whining rant after the game the other night? The other day.
Now, this is that he doesn't get the calls.
That everybody else do.
Yeah. I think that he is in a position to he holds the ball too long. He moves around so much, it's hard for an offensive lineman to form a pocket because he's, you know, and yeah, so he's going to get hit more.
But I'm not talking about hits. I'm talking about roughing the passers. He's claiming he doesn't get the 15-yard penalties that everybody else do, to quote him.
I don't know.
Now, I thought that
I honestly haven't seen the hits, so I don't
the
know.
The one that he supposedly got hurt on, that he bruised his hand on, looked to me like a penalty. They didn't call it. But they showed four or five other hits in the game. I didn't think any of them were penalties. Not a single one. And he does get out of the pocket, so forget the low stuff. You can tackle him low when he's out of the pocket. He's a runner.
Well, and even when he's in the pocket, in my opinion, when you're moving around, you're not defenseless. Defenseless is when Tom Brady, Peyton Manning just stand there.
Yeah.
Right. He's rarely defenseless because he's defending himself with his speed, quickness, and ability to avoid guys. And even when he throws, half the time he's moving to throw the ball.
Right.
So you take that little defenseless part out of it that
I thought it was somewhat embarrassing, the rant that he went on. And it's not because I don't like Michael
Vick. I just think it's clear he's back.
Yeah. Hell, that guy's back.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
The
entitled superstar.
Yeah. They gave him $100 million. Yeah. He's back to who he was.
Sergeant Michael Conroy writes in. He says, hey, guys, I have two questions or statements. First, I disagree with the defensive receiver call that the Bills cornerback was flagged on when he hit Welker. He had both feet down and started moving forward. The league is ruining defense. My question is, with defenses all over the NFL doing less than par, does it have anything to do with less padded practices? I have seen more missed tackles across the league, and I feel that without practicing, tackling, and hitting, it's hurting the D as well. I miss defense. As always, guys, thanks for your time. You guys are great.
They don't really tackle in practice ever. It's very, very rare, especially during the season. So
I do think that the rules might be contributing to some of the defensive lapses, the stuff that he's talking about. I don't know what I would do if I were a player now trying to make a tackle. The things that would be going through your head as you're trying to make a tackle,
that's how you end up paralyzed.
But yeah, I agree with Andy. And plus, there haven't been enough non-padded practices for that really to have been affected. Tackling has been an issue that Fred and Eric have been on for how long?
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that don't tackle well.
Yeah. I just think that a lot of these guys get away with so much in college because they're just so much better than most of the kids that they don't develop the right fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this whole thing with just your body's a missile and there's no wrapping up. I think that, you know, like I've said before, and, you know, it seems simple, but one of the things they should look at is arms out front trying to attempt to wrap up. If it's not there, I think that's an indication of a bad tackle and maybe should be penalized. It wouldn't solve the problem, and maybe it would cause more hand injuries.
Well, that's your theory on all the thumbs.
but I do think it would help. It would help. You have to make an attempt to tackle the guy, and that's different than hitting the guy. There's a difference between hitting a guy and tackling a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
you're right. You're right. There's too many attempts for that big knockout blow.
Yeah. These guys, you know, they're 210 pounds, and they're trying to, you know, these receivers aren't that big either. But, you know, you're not as tough as you think you are.
But I would think that the ability to separate a guy from the ball, you'd be better served going in under control and using your hands.
Using your hand, ripping him while you have your other arm wrapped around his waist or something.
And we'll see.
Ay, ay, ay. Let's see. John writes in. He says, not one person should be given a pass on defense. Defensive line, everyone has underperformed, including Wilfork.
I agree.
Yes, Wilfork is getting double teamed, but he is being paid like someone who can beat a double team.
He was invisible on Sunday.
And he is not having that leader effect. Those around him are not getting better. Kyle Love might be our best player on the line so far, And if he touches a quarterback, he gets a penalty. Linebackers. Every single one of our linebackers are responsible for easy plays over the middle, including Mayo. If we did not put our outside linebackers on the field, would it make a difference to the opposing team's offense? I don't think so. On the field, the outside linebackers disappear with the exception of Ninko, and the only reason he doesn't disappear is because we expect him to be terrible, and he has only been bad. Secondary.
I think he's been fine.
Our safeties looked lost at times, and they were never even on in TV screen on any of the catches. Our defensive backs struggled to make a play every time. To sum it up, our best defensive player so far, who I consider to be one of our biggest liabilities last year, is Arrington. Our defense will get better in typical New England attitude. It can't get worse. Yeah, I know this is too long for the radio, but it, more of a cleansing than anything else. Well, we got it all in, John. You know, it's funny, on the blog, everybody was sending Arrington to the Pro Bowl in the first half. Oh, it was. Do you think he could make the Pro Bowl?
No, you're not being serious.
I am serious. I'm
Was it an SPRW or a tweet that was, do you think he could be this year's McCourty, breakout year, big play?
I actually thought he struggled pretty badly in the first two games. And one play he made on Sunday was off a deflection that had nothing to do with him, right? The interception,
was right. I mean, that's like, spot.
Yeah, that's like crediting Drayton Florence for that pick six. It had nothing to do with it.
Shamir in Ottawa writes in, watching Sunday's game was one of the rare times where the Pats actually got overconfident during the game rather than before, after getting out to a 3-touchdown lead and then taking their foot off the gas pedal. I'm not saying the season's over now for the Pats, but I did have a feeling this game had the potential to be another Browns game from last season, and now that the Bills are 3-0, they're not a pushover for the Pats or any other team. With the Bills 3-0, do you think they're a legitimate contender for the AFC East title, or is it too soon to say that? I'm not able to listen to the show live, so I apologize if the last part of the email has already been discussed. Are the Bills a legitimate contender? I say no.
Too soon.
I agree with Andy.
They needed two major comebacks against two of the worst defenses in football to stay undefeated over the last 2 weeks.
They just don't have enough defense. I think you have to be able. And listen, I understand that teams across the board don't play enough defense, but theirs is pretty bad. That's a pretty bad defense.
I said to you during the game, I feel like this was the worst combination of two defenses that I could remember seeing on a field together.
Literally,
Fred, I thought every play in that game felt like a guy was getting tripped up before a big play.
Didn't it seem like there were
big plays. I think that may have been the combination. I have no numbers to back this up, of the two worst defenses on the field
there
together.
There were more 25-yard plays in that game that were an eyelash away from being a 75-yard play. Probably like five times.
Yeah.
I mean, the last guy got the guy by like a fingertip. And, you know, just got him to the ground. And guys were just hanging on both sides.
Which is why I thought it was funny when Bill said it was definitely competitive or something. It was, but not in a good way. It was competitive in a bad way.
I thought the San Diego game was competitive in a good way, even though it was a 14-point game.
It was kind of like we used to talk about that outside linebacker over the last couple of years has been the most competitive spot on the team. Yeah, because you have nobody worthy of starting. You get a bunch of Jags trying to start.
Right. We'll go with one more email. Bobby writes in. He says, hey, Bobby. Guys, this loss was not as hard to accept as a loss from the Jets or Colts, but it still was disappointing. One thing I don't think anyone has touched on is maybe the talent on defense could be brought out if we had a defensive coordinator. Belichick is undoubtedly a great coach, but maybe he is taking on too much. It's kind of like how back when George Lucas was younger, made the first Star Wars films, he had people around him correcting his errors, and then when he made the new ones years later, he had complete autonomy and had no one questioning him and helping to fix his work. We need a defensive coordinator to revamp this defense. What are the chances Eric Mangini comes back to the team? Never, ever.
But he's looking very thin on ESPN First Take that I was just watching.
And he ain't bad.
Oh, I've never.
Have you heard him at all?
No.
I think he's pretty good.
Mixed in a salad.
Pretty good.
So, Fred, is that true about George Lucas? Because you're an expert on science fiction.
Well, I would
so
imagine
should,
he didn't have the type of autonomy that he has now. Sure. But I thought the very last Star Wars, which was the third Star Wars, for those who really know, was actually really, really good.
And you guys should take that.
The last one produced.
He's an expert on science.
The sixth one that came out, number three in the
was one of the best.
The series.
One of the best.
Mel Carr used to say
of the six.
We're gonna win the series.
John Rooks here. because Patriots playbook.
You
is
have
up.
Is it an special expanded edition of Nitpick Tuesday?
He's changing Nitpick.
We actually got tweets. We got tweets during the game.
Sucky,
tweets.
Sucky, sucky.
John Rook should start now. He's going to have to nitpick so much.
Well, it's nice. He's changing it from Nitpick Tuesday to Nuclear Bomb Tuesday, right?
Nuclear Bomb Tuesday. Because
this is
tell Pete to stay home today.
I'm not ready to jump off the deep end, though. I mean, as bad as it stunk while watching it and going through it, like I'm sure everybody has already sort of transcribed here, I like to have the 2 days to sit here and sort of evaluate.
So does Fred. He'll have him in the Super Bowl again by the end of the
tomorrow. Tomorrow, Andy and I are idiot fat mouths.
Not
going to
put him in the
us.
Super Bowl yet, but I will say, though, I like to have a chance to let it, you know, settle and really think about, okay,
how bad McCourty was.
Yeah, he was bad.
He stinks right now.
So was Bodden.
Oh, yeah. Bodden his best friend right now is McCourty because he sucks more than Bodden does. If McCourty
more is expected
well.
Out of
and to
McCourty,
me,
so it's
that's really the most disappointing aspect of the entire defense. Yep. Those guys should not stink as bad as they stink right now.
Well, I said that if McCourty even made half the plays that he's not making now, I think they would have won that game.
You might be right.
And we wouldn't be so worried.
You might be right.
But he was one of the cornerstones going into this season with Mayo and Wilfork on defense. And
let me ask
there.
You guys a question now that we're all here together. Why doesn't this team look at playing more zone?
Well, that was brought up on the blog, too. A lot of people thought that maybe they'll go into a zone because they just can't man up.
A lot of people said that maybe that's part of McCourty's struggles is they played a lot of zone for him last year. And so far through three games, they seem to be playing more man.
It's a ton more man. There's no comparison.
Do
you have the safeties, though?
No. And I think that's probably why.
I think that's probably the answer.
I think they've shot themselves in the foot
by cutting James Sanders. Huh?
Sanders is one.
I'm okay.
Frankly, I think Merriweather would have been another just because at least he knows how to play back there and understands the system.
And not only he's gone, he rubbed his mojo off on Sergio Brown with the number.
Yeah, I agree with that. Number 31 thing. I agree with that, by the way.
All right. Well, John,
I agree with that.
What do you got going on playbook, John?
Are you
going
to go 1 to 53 on the nitpicks and just start with Gustowski and write on down the line?
With everybody? No, I wouldn't have enough time.
Well, that's why we kicked Pete out.
But like Fred said, it's more like a nuclear bomb Tuesday than nitpick Tuesday, but we'll manage to work it in. And I'm going to show you that, you know, not every cloud out there is black.
There we go. All right.
As long as you focus on Welker and Gronkowski, you're fine.
All right. John's up.
Yes, that's true.
And we'll see you tomorrow here in PFW in Progress.
Oh, hot damn. This is my jam. Keep me partying to the AM. Y'all don't understand.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.